And we can, we should probably, when we start, we're back with a variety of folks, some ambulance folks, building folks. That way, I'm sorry.
We met a couple people.
Okay.
Yeah, recognize. That was the tour last time, so, yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, everyone, I'm Janelle.
Hi, I'm Jeremy.
Good to see you. Jessica Kramer. Good to see you.
Hi, Mark, nice to meet you.
Nice to see you.
I'm Carl.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you all, welcome.
Thank you.
It really bothers me to have people behind my back, so, you know, or making faces. Yeah, you're making faces.
Hey,
as long as you don't have cards or anything.
Yeah, that's what.
Trying to push you out.
I look up like I'm gonna get thirsty.
Call to order the Johnson County Board of Supervisors meeting for April 29, 2015. This is for the purpose of interviewing for the medical examiner and ambulance facility design. We're gonna be interviewing the architectural and engineering design firms, and we'll be starting off with Carlson Design Team. Good morning.
Good morning.
We're going to introduce ourselves, and we'll have you introduce yourselves when we get started here. I'm Pat Hardy, Johnson County Supervisor.
I'm Mike Carberry, Supervisor.
Johnson County Supervisor Terrence Duschel.
I'm Kimberly, I'm from the Auditor's Office.
Rod Sullivan, Board of Supervisors.
Janelle Redding, a member of the Board of Supervisors.
And this is a group here that are going to sit in on the interviews as well.
Josh Mussars on the Space Needs Committee and Planning and Zoning.
Elton Slaughter, Facilities Manager.
Michael Kennedy, the Construction Manager.
Dave Dvorsky, Johnson County Ambulance.
Andy Johnson, Assistant to the Board.
Steve Strummer, Johnson County Ambulance.
Becky Fodden, Assistant to the Board.
Oh, I'm Robert Carlson, Carlson Design Team.
Mark Rohde, Leggett Architects.
Jessica Kramer with Carlson Design Team.
And I'm Jeremy Huseman with Modus Engineering.
Good morning.
Good morning.
When we start out, you'll have about 20 minutes for a presentation, and you will keep track of the time. And we'll have about 20 minutes to 30 minutes for questions and answers in both directions. Okay. Go ahead and get started if you like.
Okay. Why this team? Why did we get this group together? Leggett and Carlson Design Team have been talking together for over a year. Leggett has an interest in coming to Iowa City. For this market, they do university-type work. We do a lot of work for the University of Iowa. They also have project types. We don't have any municipal and physical plant-type projects. We don't have that. It was a good intermix, firm philosophies mix, and we have actually interviewed a couple times for projects together, and this is a team we think is planning to be a long-term relationship. Modus is an engineering firm. They moved to Iowa City, opened the Iowa City office. We have been working with them on multiple projects. We're comfortable with them. M2B is the structural engineers. Worked with Lynn for over 30 years. So that's really the core of the team. Why us? We believe in teamwork. That's what's Carlson Design Team. We put together a team to join your team, and that whole team, everybody's ideas, everybody's thoughts, everybody's needs, all blend together to create your building. It's not our building, it's your building. We build the building that meets your needs the best we can. Our goal is that we have a building at the end that you are very proud of and that we are very proud of. As the slide says, I've been doing this for over 40 years in Iowa City. Started work in Iowa City the day after Labor Day in 1974. We've been here ever since.
My name is Jessica Kramer, and I have over 15 years working experience here in Iowa City. I came back here after getting my degree at Iowa State, and I was actually born and raised here, and I actually live in the county right now and not in town. So, and I'm also the lead AP and would be the project architect on the project.
As I mentioned before, I'm Mark Rohde with Leggett Architects. We've just finished celebrating our 15th year in business. We're a 75-person firm in the Northern Illinois and Quad Cities area. So as Bob mentioned, we've been trying to get together and you know, complement both sides. We do a lot of municipal public. In fact, the bulk of our work is public sector work, whether it's K-12, police, fire, public works, things like that. So it was a very good fit. On this project, I will be in the role more on the upfront design side. I'll be involved with all the programming, planning, space needs, conservation. Shredding, which we'll talk about in a little bit and all of that. You know, I'll work together with Jessica. So while she'll be, you know, leading the efforts for the team here, I'll be supporting and working with her on the design aspect.
Trying to get out in front here a little bit. Again, I'm Jeremy Huseman with Modus Engineering. Modus, similar to Leggett, has been in operation for over 50 years. We were formerly known as Gilmore and Doyle, but recently changed our names to kind of shake things up. I've been with the company for 7 years, and most recently, as Bob mentioned, helped open the Iowa City office just about 2 years ago. So we've had a strong focus on sustainability. I know that's one of your strong desires as well. And we've recently showcased that in our newly renovated Des Moines office, which is slated to be Iowa's first net zero office building.
Similar project experience, something to match up with projects, kind of showing you just a little. Everything you saw at Mercy Hospital that got built from 1993 through 2003, I did. So every built project, part of that was the ambulance garage, that's why we brought it up. Done ambulance garage at Mercy twice, the VA Medical Center redid theirs. And ambulance garages in New York and in Texas while I'm working at HLM. This is Iowa City Cancer Treatment Center, eventually, out on the north side at Northgate. That is a energy use project. We use ground source heat pumps. We worked with the Weitz Group, got a rebate through Mid-America. We talked through with the owner doing LEED. We talked about the expanse of the paperwork in that. They felt as long as we followed the LEED principles and did an energy efficient building, they didn't want to pay for the paperwork. But we managed to get substantial. We cut their energy costs by more than half and gave them a building that was double the size by being able to do ground source and the energy efficiency we were able to give them.
The next project is the Julia Junior College Facility Services Building. It's basically a vehicle storage administration and maintenance building, like a public works building for a college campus. The campus is very early 1970s architecture, a lot of square, flat roof, white, not everybody's favorite, but we had to go in and obviously respect it, but we didn't want to copy it. The components of the building are similar to your scope. There's an administrative area, there's an office and shop component, and there's a vehicle storage and maintenance component. So we took each mass and made it very distinct and obvious. So in the upper left photo, the portion with the windows and the smoother metal panels, more of a finished look that you see illustrated by the wood beams and everything inside, that's the administrative public area. So you sort of put the money at the front of the house, if you will. To the right of that is a gray corrugated metal siding component, which is basically all the offices and shops for the various divisions. And then sticking up in the back is a white, you know, 30-foot high precast concrete box. So we went, you know, we had to work with the budget. Budget is key. We understand we don't do you any good if we design something that's not buildable. And so we structured the building to, you know, make the space finish level appropriate for the need. This is a LEED Gold certified building. The college only asked for certified, and we got into it early and knew we could hit silver easily. And with no extra cost, as we worked through it, we were able to capture enough points to get LEED Gold. So, you know, all parties were obviously thrilled. All of our projects in the past, I'd say 5 or 6 years, are LEED. We were championing LEED when people would look at us like, eh, but now it's just the norm.
Mark, how many square foot is that building?
That is about 42,000 square foot. You're going to ask me how much it cost. It was about $6.8 million.
Okay.
And that's out. I mean, that's that site civil. That's the material storage. I mean, that's the whole project total. So.
Perfect. Thanks.
Village of Algonquin Public Works Facility, that's a few years older than that, so it's very sustainably designed. It does not have LEED certification because that wasn't going quite then. But it's basically, they had their own requirements that every building, whether it was a grocery store, a Taco Bell, a car wash, had to have certain characteristics, residential shingles and brick or masonry. So even though this is kind of up on a hill in a somewhat industrial area, it overlooks the Fox River. It's a really nice view. You can see it in winter when there's not trees, but in summer it's totally secluded. You can see the front portion is very human scale. It's brick piers with stone bases, shingled roof, green trim downspouts windows. But around the back, which you really can't get to, but in the upper left or upper right photo, it's all precast concrete. So again, it's the same thing. Make it nice where the visitors, the public, the taxpayers come, but don't go overboard and design the dreaded Taj Mahal. Everybody tells us we don't want a Taj Mahal. We're very aware in the public sector, you've got constituents looking at your project. And so we're always, you know, very responsible. In the inside, though, we bring in wood, but at the same time in the garage, we brought in some natural lighting. The roof is very high. We like to use as much natural lighting, ventilation, et cetera, as possible. This whole corridor along the front there, that's nothing more than a corridor. All the offices are one step behind, but they didn't want salespeople to come in and work their way through the garage. So we have this nice light-filled corridor, and then there's doors into everybody's office, but they can pop the windows open and you know, get a cross breeze. And the last one we have to show is Arlington Heights Public Works Facility. Now, this was on a huge facility. Today, it's about 160,000 square feet, so obviously much larger than we're talking here, but it was in a neighborhood. It was surrounded. It had a manufacturing building to the north, apartments to the east, and high-end teardowns to the south. So you had a little bit of everybody to try to keep happy. So, you know, is anybody thrilled about a public works building being there? Probably not, but it was there before they moved in. So when we what we did is we did a master plan, and in the space needs, we did a full building assessment. And the buildings that could remain did, very sustainable. The buildings that were beyond their useful life, we tore down. And then we connected it. So what used to be five or six buildings and a lot of asphalt is now one cohesive facility. So that garage shot right here, that what used to be outdoors, that was all the outside parking lot. So again, you know, a prairie-style flat roof building to try to fit in with the neighborhood. We didn't do gabled roofs. The size would have made it like a 60-foot peak, so it's all flat roof to fit in the neighborhood. But again, you can see the employee training area, a lot of natural light, just a very nice space. Jeremy?
Great, thank you. A couple examples from MODIS. The first one is the Des Moines Municipal Services Center. It's a very large maintenance facility for some of the city vehicles there in Des Moines. It does have a large shop area that's not shown here, as well as some of the offices that are showcased here. It uses a very advanced or high-tech approach to sustainability in that they have variable refrigerant flow or VRF systems for heating and cooling. They do rainwater capture and solar thermal pretreatment to create hot domestic water, as well as lots of daylighting, as you can see here, and LED throughout. So this building was able to achieve LEED Gold using all those things. Now, to contrast this larger facility, we have a smaller example, the Thomas Park Maintenance Facility up in Marion, Iowa. Similar function, but you can see it's a little different in look and the approach. They used high-efficiency furnaces for heating and cooling, condensing boilers for the radiant floor. The lighting is all fluorescent, T8 fluorescent, but you also notice this building also achieved LEED Gold. So regardless of the technology, there are still options for achieving high sustainability.
We're going to kind of, the rest of the interview is really based off the questions that you guys had asked, and we'll just kind of try and address them and talk to them. Timeline. We would like to talk to you about doing a collaborative design charrette for about 3 days, really kick the design off and get it going. Schematic design is more about 4 weeks. Design development, take everything. This is really following your procedures that you outlined in the RFQ. In construction documents, about 8 weeks. That's phasing. This is the existing ambulance garage. There's 80 feet left to a property. We believe that to keep the ambulance garage located here, The ambulance garage, new ambulance garage, needs to be on the north side. When we toured with the ambulance facility, we talked about the fact that backing up an ambulance is difficult now. You have to have two people spot. So this is actually a drive-through design where you come in this door, medical examiners, the ambulances can pull through, and then they drive back out. They drive in and drive out. They should not need to back up within the facility. The rest of the building then, we use the square footages off the napkin sketch that we were sent. 5,200 square foot of physical plant. There can be a wall here, or this can be open. If it's open, you can have a garage here, and once again, do that same drive-through and out. The office space at the front, freight elevator to go up to the upper floors.
You mentioned on your RFP project labor agreements, almost all of the work that, like I said, that we do that's public sector is all prevailing wage work. I mean, you know, we don't say union or not union, but you're paying prevailing wages. All of our specifications and documents are geared around that. You know, we put the current prevailing wage rates in the project specs right before we go out to bid. So everything's current. We check all the paperwork. We're very well versed with that. In addition, in Illinois, when you work for the Illinois Capital Development Board, they have PLAs or project labor agreements. So again, you know, it's basically focused on protecting a project from stoppage during sort of a strike. And so again, we're familiar with that. I'm CDB certified, so that's just, it's a paperwork, but our, you know, our folks are very, very well versed in that type of agreements.
So we've talked and showed several examples of LEED projects, sustainable projects that we have significant experience in. So I'd like to talk about a few benefits of sustainability and LEED certification. Obviously, the building is going to operate more efficiently and save some money in that regard. But most cases, the maintenance cost can be less as well. For example, LED lighting, if you install that light, it should last much longer than other technologies. The reduced environmental impact, whether we're using recycled materials or local materials, is a strong benefit. And lastly, more specific to our areas, the Mid-American rebates that Bob mentioned earlier. There are lots of programs around, and we have lots of experience working with Mid-American to achieve some of those benefits and bring further cost savings to the project.
As far as the day-to-day operations, I would be the project architect and the lead on the project. I would be the main point of contact. Our office is about four blocks from here, and so we're very close to the project site. And I would also work at coordinating all of the consultants and all the information together and making things flow together for the final product.
You asked about what our design process was. You guys gave a very nicely detailed description to us, so we didn't feel we needed to repeat it back to you. But what I'd like you to learn about our team is that I think we operate a little different than the traditional model, which is put up there, where you can see we have a light bulb, the architect's idea. You know, the architect comes, meets with you, gets some data, and says, thanks, I got it, goes back to the office, pulls together what they think is amazing, and brings it to you. And everybody says, yeah, but what about this? And you didn't do this, and you didn't do this. And we go, and we go back to the office. And you work your way through the process of, you know, conceptual, schematic, design, development. So it's a fine process, and it's worked for, you know, thousands of years. But what we like to do is what we call the collaborative design process, which is phases of SD and DD and so on stay the same. But the difference is anybody who's part of the project or that wants to be part of the project is there at the get-go. So, you know, and for something like this, we showed a more streamlined version where we think in 3 days we can pretty much get this done. So, you know, the morning of the first day, the whole group of stakeholders and users, whoever you want, you know, and us and our engineers and anybody from the county and so on, all comes together in a brainstorming session. We've got the chalk talk pad, like what are the goals, what are the needs, you know, we'll talk aesthetics, we'll talk function, program. You know, we will then specifically talk more about the space needs. I know you've already done programming and planning because you've given us about 26,000 square feet. We're going to, like, revisit each one of those and find out more. Take a lunch break. Come back in the rest of the day, pass through the space needs. By the end of the day, we will have a program that's pretty good. We'll come back day two. We'll have some, you know, drawings, some Google Maps laid out there. We'll have foam blocks we can move around representing the different sizes. And we'll sit here as a group and someone go, well, you know, if you put the bay like this and you rotated this 90, we could do this and we'll do this. And we'll sit here and we'll literally snap a couple photos of it and we'll start over. And we will end that day where you all walk out here and say, hey, we've got 2, 3, 4 good, super rough conceptual sketches that then we will go back with, you know, Jessica and her group and hash it out. And then we'll come back with 2, 3, 4 conceptual ideas that hopefully we can refine down to one. If for some reason, at the end of that, everybody's going, man, these are two really great solutions. I don't know if we can pick yet. We got to bring them to the next level. Well, we'll develop those. It's a work in progress. But the goal is you don't want to draw out the design process, but at the same time, you don't want to cut it short. But time is of an essence to everybody. So we don't want to tell you, oh, we're going to need 2 months to figure. We can really, you know, in a several day period, I think you're going to walk out with a very good feeling of design, schedule, and budget. So,
opportunities for expansion. The building napkin sketch that you showed, sent us, fills the lot. As long as you agree to conform to the Iowa City zoning ordinance, you are the county, you can't ignore it. We did it, the VA decided that we follow, when we, the three research buildings that were built, those were my buildings, I did the master plan and laid all that out. We met with the city said, well, you can't do this and that. The one corner of the one building goes slightly into what the city front yard is. Changing that would have caused problems for the VA, and we apologized to the city. I did, and said, and we reminded them that we are the federal government. You're down here, and you are the county. But on the other hand, good neighbor policy is you follow what you can. So expansion is vertical, or buying additional property. Vertical expansion costs money. The cancer treatment center that we showed is designed to have another floor added. The roof deck today is actually poured as a floor slab. Mercy Hospital, we did that. University Hospitals, HLM, and we've done that at hospitals all over the country. You're landlocked in area. The best place a lot of times for the more rooms is above you. So you design the structure, but there's a premium that goes with that. The budget on this project is going to be tight. We're going to need to work that through. Does it make sense to allow for vertical expansion? It will tell you what the costs for that are, what those opportunities are. Does the building make sense that maybe the ambulance bay is a metal building type structure and the other side is more of an three-story office building? You've got a 26,000 square foot program. To get to gross square feet, you would generally add minimum 15%. That's 30,000 square feet. That's almost two full floors on this building. You cheat, make three stories, but then you've already got a three-story building. This area is now with the riverfront, you can go 5. So we could theoretically go 2 more if that's what you want to do. But that's the expansion capabilities.
And then I think we're ready to take your questions.
Mark, I really like your team approach, and these projects are all great. How many times does this team work together, or is this a new team, so to speak?
This would be a new team. When I was at HLM, we worked all over the country. We worked in teams.
Right.
Elmhurst Hospital in Queens, I managed that project. I actually lived in Iowa City, managed the project. We had our New York office, 2 supplemental architectural firms, 2 structural firms, an MEP firm, and 5 consulting firms. Those firms had never worked together before.
Right.
We worked together seamlessly. We know how to put teams together and work. That's what I did for years. So teamwork is really pretty simple. That's the reason we spent a lot of time, 2 firms, talking to each other about firm philosophy and how we do work to make sure, because we talked to a lot of firms. There's an awful lot of architectural firms that love to come to Iowa City and do work. And they need a local, and they come and talk to us, and there's a lot of them we don't want anything to do with. Their philosophy of how you do work, they're more, you know, it's our design. You get to live in our building. Some of them are that. Some of them are all about making money. You know, we will do this, you know, we're going to get as much fee as we can and put as little effort as we can in to get to the profit. Well, that's not going to produce the best product. So we found a firm in Leggett that has the same philosophy. Yes, we need to make money so that we can continue to run a business, but we need to be successful. And we think that this is a group we get along with fairly well.
Okay.
And we team with other firms. It's a fairly common practice, you know. But we only do it when we compliment, you know. We're not here to compete against anybody, but it's like, this is our strong suit, you know, and I think it brings you a very good team. Yeah, I wish I'd say we've done 10 projects together, but you know what? There's always got to be that first one to go. But, you know, like I said, we, as well as Bob, are very well-versed in teaming with other firms.
In M2B, Modus, the rest of the engineering, rest of the team, we've worked with for years.
Yes.
We're doing, I think, 5 projects with Modus right now.
Thanks, Robert.
You mentioned the steel building portion of the building possibility. Mm-hmm. What is life expectancy on something like that?
Structural steel, and that's going to be 50 to 100 years.
Wait, you mean like the pole? You mean like the ambulance garage? Like a
right, yeah, I think you mentioned. We're still thinking the exterior shell would still be a hard shell finish. Oh. It would look like. I'm talking the building structure. Metal buildings, it's not standard steel framing. They actually manufacture the steel, the size, exactly the size they need. That's usually one of the most economical ways to put a structure up for a building. It accommodates that load at that point in time, but it's a steel frame building. That steel frame is going to be there for a long time. Okay. We, you know, and the skin, we'll put a skin on that lasts, you know, as far as roofing and that.
Guys,
we're not talking a Morton building.
That's
we're not talking the Morton building that sits out. There are some Morton buildings that you look at. Sells and Wordage's office is not a Morton. We won an award for that, but that's a metal building. And the front office part of that, you would never know is a metal building.
Your slide on how long it would take to get to construction documents, was that cumulative or 8 weeks total?
No, that's 3 days plus, yeah, so 3 to 4 months. Again, what did I tell
you? No, it was 18 weeks.
Yeah, 4 and 6 and 8.
The design, there's two parts of the process. One is the design part. The design that includes your review time. We're going to need to have meetings in there. We'll do work. We'll get a concept together. We'll present it to you. We'll go back and boil it out. That all takes time because we need to arrange when you guys can meet. At the end of each one of those phases, you're going to have 5 days to sit and mull over and everybody go through this thing and think about it and go, you missed, you know, that my desk has to be on the right side. I can't write left-handed. You know, all those little things that are really important in some ways. But that's that during that design process. Design time also is when all the thinking takes place. When you get the construction documents, you need to. The other thing that adds to this time frame, lead takes time. There's a lot of paperwork to do. You have to make a submission. You have to get an approval before you can proceed. If you proceed ahead of schedule on lead, you can get yourself in a hole. That's the older version, at least.
Robert, let me follow up on that. You seem kind of negative to lead. Can you explain?
Oh, no, I'm not negative to lead. I'm sorry. We're a lead member firm. We have been. I took the lead exam. I forgot the basic rule. I studied all the technical part. I didn't study all the paperwork part because I kind of figured the paperwork part would flow. I failed by 1 point. But lead's an important thing to do. My only problem with lead was that client, we thought we were going to do a lead building. When we got all down, we sat down and we went down. They hired me. The building got built, but they called me and said, Bob, we need a new building. Will you do it for us? Go find me a lot. So this is somebody I knew for a long time. So we sat down when we got the lot pick. We got building kind of ideas. We sat down and went through with them what all the costs were, what our fees, how our fee worked, how everything was. And one of the line items was the cost for the paperwork for lead, not material costs, because we figure the material cost doesn't really cost any more to build a lead building than what you ought to be building anyway. But there's just that paperwork chunk. And they looked at that paperwork dollars and said, we don't need a certificate on the wall. It's really going to save that. But I'm not negative to lead. Things take time. The fact that something takes time is good sometimes because it gives you time to think. It's, you know, you get it all done, you rush through it. 3 weeks later, a week later, all of a sudden this little light bulb comes on in the back of your head and you go, well, wait a minute. We just turned this. We can do this. While you're doing the lead paperwork, it's going to make you go through and think about things. and make sure that you have everything covered. It's really a positive thing. There's just an expense that goes with it. So I'm not anti-lead at all. We were a lead member firm before, as soon as we could. So we started the firm, we became a lead member firm about as early as you could in the process. Because we believe and support that. That's why the staff, I've got staff who's lead. I've never gone back and wanted to take the new test. I'm actually most of the way through becoming a another organization professional. Because to me, we have lead in the office. I thought, okay, let's go get another version of sustainability. And get, so I'll be a green apple.
I think to summarize, we're strong advocates of sustainability, and at sometimes lead can be an obstacle to the sustainability for some clients. So we push it whenever we can, and all of our designs are sustainable to the core, regardless of that certification. So when we have the chance and a client that does want to pursue lead, we're super grateful to be able to work with them and pursue that process.
You mentioned the Marion, I think it was, fluorescent lighting.
Yeah.
I would hope that you go LED lighting rather than
that
I can't believe you got a lead gold with F8s. We told me that yesterday. I was kind of blown away because we do everything as LED now.
So it's a combination of the technology, but lighting levels as well. Lots of people like things really bright, but it doesn't always have to be super bright to meet code and be energy efficient. So there is a happy medium there. That project is now 2 or 3 years old, and prices for LED have really come down. So most projects going forward, last year on, will be LED. The main reason for sharing that example is just to say it doesn't have to be expensive and high tech to be sustainable. But there are definitely options and strategies that we can use to be more sustainable or benefit your project that way. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about financing. We have a budget for this building, and we are, theoretically pretty bound by that as a government. I mean, there may be a little bit of additional money that we can come up with, but pretty much our bottom line is our bottom line. If we're going to change that, it's a relatively big decision. So I wonder if you can talk about how you're going to balance all the different competing needs. We know we're going to come in with wants that go beyond what's budgeted. And so how are you going to address
that? You know, when we do that charrette process, and they said the first thing is goals. And if your goal is meet the budget, you know what I mean? Message received. And you can't always have everything, but we're going to, you know, and I said, you folks have already done a space needs analysis, but we're going to start with that. And early on, before we draw anything, we're going to, at a very conceptual square foot cost estimate, assign numbers. So if we say, you know, admin space is $180 a square foot and vehicle storage is maybe $95 a square foot, before we even start shredding, if we total up and go, we're at X many million dollars, and you guys go, no, we're going to have to start vetting that out before. Now, you can do it as a master plan, you can phase it, you can come up with one of your concept schemes that, hey, this would be our ultimate build-out if we could get everything, but the budget's not going to allow us to get everything. So make sure that the building is designed that we can expand it in the future. And like you said, whether it's purchasing property to the east or to the south or going up, you know, plan for that. But you're going to have to balance it. But we are not going to get ourselves too far along that we're going to come back to you at the end of SD and go, well, here it is, $10 million. What do you think? And everybody, you know, says, no. We're going to know that, like, during those first 3 days. We're going to establish that budget as part of the and this is why we want a group affair. You know what I mean? We want everybody to be there part of this, not just come back and report. You know, so we won't go on without being within your budget.
We do buildings in budget. That is, I have 20 years of managing, being the prime architect and principal of doing Project University, 10-15 years before working. We have increased the project budget once. For the Tufix, when we did Cancer Treatment Center, I told them the dollar amount before, when we bought the lot, how much the building would cost, max. We came in $200,000 lower than that number. And that was not a rich number to start with. We worked together. I have good friends in the construction community around Iowa City. If I need to know what something's going to cost to build, I can call them up, go over and sit down and not use means to use means as part of it, but sit down and go through with them and say, what's this really going to cost to do this? And they'll sit down and spend an hour with you or take the time with you to come back and tell you, this is going to cost you this much. So that we know, you know, the budget on this building is no question about it, it's tight. We're going to have to, that's one of the reasons doing a charrette-type process is going to make sense to us, because we're going to have to watch the P's and Q's all the way through this. There's no, I do not want to do is come back to you at schematic design and say, the building you guys really want is $4.5 million. Quite, you know, you just need to find another $900,000. Because that doesn't, that's not how the world works. So
Jessica's
we need to do a building.
Taxes are going up. If that's...
Yeah. Well, I live in Johnson County, too. Well, I live in Iowa City, so I pay Johnson County taxes.
We take your money off.
Yeah, yeah. I've been taking my money for 40-some years.
Well, we like that.
The other thing is we have a database of dozens of buildings. So nothing tells you what something costs better than the last one. You know what I mean? So we've got building types and shapes and sizes and metal buildings and precast buildings and masonry buildings and everything. So we've got a pretty good history.
I mean, I think we will reach a point where we'll have to decide is something in or out.
Right.
Or do we put on, do we add some additional money?
You'll have to make the
decisions. I want to make those decisions very early in the process, not at the end.
Yeah, and one of the things, the garage, ambulance garage we showed, actually will fit a 450 ambulance. You're using 350. Is there any reason that we would need to design for a 450? You know, one of the problems with the ambulance garage is it doesn't fit the new ambulances. We want to make sure that 4 years from now or 5 years from now when somebody buys, you know, the new ambulance, we need to get this model and that it just doesn't fit. So we need, so we'll go through that and we'll make the building. But those are decisions you need to be part of. One of the things I always tell clients is when I sit down and you ask me to do something, one of the things we'll come back with is here's how we would do it, and this is the impact on the budget because it's your money. And if we can build the building, if we're at $3 million on the project and there's $600,000 left, I've never seen that as $600,000 I get to spend. That's $600,000 it gets to go back. The only exception to that is when a Catholic hospital sells municipal bonds, you spend every last dime, at least in Texas, because it's Texas state law.
I just had a couple questions. How busy are you folks right now on things? And as you look at the design, are you looking at tearing down the entire block and then just starting fresh, or are you looking at two?
Well, that's where the phasing comes in, because when we toured with Steve and Elton back, that was last month, wasn't it? You know, we realize it's a huge expenditure to ask you guys to pick up all this stuff and go move somewhere and you can do it, but I don't know why I would spend the money to do it. So that's why the phased approach is. So build to the north first.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about that, but then we kind of just almost conceded it.
No, I couldn't throw a number on it, but I mean, you got a lot of stuff in that building. And so to go, you know, to rent the space and to move it and move every little, you know, every little piece and all the computers and the phones, you know, it's just, if you wanted to, by all means, it would make it simpler, level the site and go new. But I think you might spend another $100,000 or $200,000.
Yeah, the question is the cost of moving.
I wouldn't do it.
And that'll be one of the numbers we come back to.
Okay. Because, I mean, we figured out a way to move that's not as expensive as... Dave just figured out a way to move.
Well, it is
a matter of cost and time. Right. I mean, if phasing that costs $200,000 more in 4 more months versus...
Absolutely, it could. And we can look at it that way, because if you draw the construction project, maybe you could build a building of this size, honestly, 8 months, you know, 8, 10 months. But if it takes 12 to 14 because of the phased, and, you know, you got general conditions for the contractor at, you know, I don't know, $30,000-$40,000 a month. And so you're right. It could end up, you may say, it's going to cost us $50,000 to move and $200,000 to phase it. Let's move. And that's all the stuff that we would vet out. I'm not sure we get to that level of detail on the charrette meeting, but I think that's a very good point that you brought up.
I was looking at your napkin. I was trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
And as far as how busy are you folks, there's a lot of things going on. And, you know, as you know, in almost a two-mile radius, we have, what, $2 billion worth of construction going on around here. So
we have zero of it, so if that matters.
we actually have a new staff member coming on next month after graduation. And so we are looking for another big project to round out our existing staff and our new upcoming people, too.
And it's 75 people. You know, an architect's backlog, typically ours, is never more 2 to 3 months. I mean, nobody hires you unless it's the federal government and sits for a year. But most people are like, great, let's get started. So usually when we get a project, you know, within the next couple weeks, you're doing it. So you never say, oh, I've got work for the next 2 years. I mean, that never happens. So we're as busy. We're doing just great. Things are fine. But we do have 75 people, and we don't have any issues with staffing. Like I said, and obviously this group's going to be doing the actual more down and dirty, the construction document side, and we're going to be up on the upfront side. So, you know, we're confident that there's no, I mean, if you said start next week, we'd be out here. So
I think our staff, we're ready to kind of finishing up on a final big project and ready for the next ones.
I guess one of the other questions that the staff had actually had was what lead related services does your proposal include? We have two lead individuals on staff here. Train not necessarily to the expertise that perhaps some of you folks have. What all is included in your proposal?
Well, the complete, I mean, sustainable design and lead services would just be in there. I mean, we haven't negotiated any sort of, obviously, proposal if you were to select us, but, I mean, I'm lead certified, I'm assuming you are. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll do the whole gamut. So, you know, there's two sets of points, really. There's design points and construction points. So, you know, the design points don't slow the project down. As you're designing it, we're working with the engineers to figure out what the potential points are. And we will have a different person, typically, at least the way we operate, handling the lead. So it's not going to be me. You know, it's going to be somebody who's separate. We, you know, our director of sustainability in our office will assign somebody. And they'll be kind of, while the project's moving on, gathering the data and uploading and submitting to, you know, USGBC. And then there's the second set of points that you can't even get until you're under construction. So, and that's why you won't find out what level of lead until 2, 3, 4 months after the building's built, because by the time the contractor gets you all this stuff and then you submit it to LEED, USGBC, excuse me, usually there's a comment or two. Oh, you rejected this point. You get one shot if you don't want to pay more money. And if you get one shot to protest or not protest. So, you know, it'll take some time, but it's not going to affect project schedule, and it's just part of what we do now. So I would just say it's included.
So the fees for certification and so forth, you build that in?
Yeah, and the actual certification, usually we do that as a reimbursable, you know, the cost to get the plaque, if you will.
So can we talk about the documentation? Josh, sitting behind me, not only is LEED certified, he teaches it. So the last building we built that was LEED certified, Josh did the documentation, and we negotiated that with architects so that it was out of their fee structure.
Perfect.
Is that a possibility?
Yes.
Definitely. Okay.
Yeah. Welcome aboard, Josh.
Do you also have a preferred commissioning agent that you work with?
No, we don't have a preferred commissioning agent. I think as part of the RFQ, we were trying to get that information from you.
Okay.
And I think the building's small enough that the commissioning agent can actually come from your firm. I don't really have the expertise. I can't commission the building. I can't do the energy model. More technical credits, such as in the energy and atmosphere, I wouldn't feel comfortable submitting those.
Sure.
But the majority of them, the credits, we can do in-house.
That would be, I mean, we have no... I mean, we do it as a service, but it's not something that we...
You said reimbursable, so that...
Well, the actual physical cost of getting the certification. You know, when we first register the site, you know, it varies, $400, $500, $600. That's a reimbursable expense. Towards it. If the owner, which I've never had happen, but I like it. If the owner says, we're going to take it, we're going to work with you, you're going to be like our team member, you know, we're going to keep you uploaded with information you need, that would be perfectly fine by me.
In our fee proposal, we excluded the certification part.
Okay.
Just because I prefer the certification person will talk about this. You know, we can do it in-house, or do we hire somebody else as a third party? Someone who watches over that not that we would do anything wrong, but it's always better to have another set of eyes. You know, so if, what would that cost to do that versus what it costs to do this? And at that point, that's where we'd sit down and talk through, okay, you're going to take, John's going to take care of this part, we'll take care of that. That's that fine negotiation as part of the fee structure. Yes, we'd be glad to have him do that. Do we get a certification, and then we'll pick that person, that firm. We've worked with them before. You pick them and get somebody you're comfortable with, we're comfortable with, and that has a reasonable fee structure. We worked with one who we found out later that the fee structure they were charging was three times more than what the norm was.
Question for Jeremy. Sure. I'm really interested in your Des Moines office that's net zero. Given our budget, I don't think that we could become a net zero building, but given our budget, do you foresee, and we have made a commitment as a board and as a county to move forward on solar. We're using the third-party power purchase agreement type of structuring. Do you envision this building being able to, what energy would you use? Ground source heat pumps, that sort of stuff, solar on the roof?
Sure. There would need to be some cost analysis done to see what our defined options are.
Right.
Geothermal compared to VRF, variable refrigerant flow.
Right.
Very similar in energy savings.
Right.
And the cost is much better typically on the VRF technology as well. So more and more we've seen facilities, geo is a buzzword, and they really want that. And we help them when we can, but if they can't get to that and there's maybe a DNR, interference, then we go with VRF. And it's easily in the realm of efficiency and more economical.
Can you give a real basic elevator speech on VRF?
Sure.
What is it?
Sure. It's variable refrigerant flow. So instead of sending air through a duct system, it sends refrigerant through a piping system throughout the building. And when you look at a duct, large duct, and you're moving air through that compared to a small pipe, and you're running refrigerant through that, there's much less energy required to move this small amount of fluid versus all of this air. So that's where you get your savings from. If we were to do a phasing strategy, VRF is a very good candidate for phasing as well. It's more modular in nature. You can add to it later on. So it definitely brings a lot to the table, but it's a newer technology in the area that is being embraced throughout.
We're running short on time.
Yep, sure.
So, if you have any last comments you would like to make or something you really need to have answered.
Well, I'd like one last question. Assuming we contract with you, who do you see as your client? There's a room full of people here. How do you do that?
I'm hoping that you will assign a project manager that will be our contact.
You are the
supervisors are our client, and our client and you are Johnson County. When I work for the University of Iowa, I'm working for the people of the state of Iowa. I have a responsibility to spend their money wisely. Not that the university isn't spending their money wisely. I also have that responsibility. I have a responsibility to the citizens of Johnson County to spend their money wisely. You are the ones that are deciding what is best for the county. But our job is to do the best we can do and spend your money wisely on all the items and components and help you understand the budget decisions need to get made. We will make recommendations. You're the client. It's your money. People's money, we need to take care of it. It's precious.
Thank you. Any comments?
We're dedicated, the whole group is, we listen to our clients, we provide quality design, we're on schedule, and we're on budget. And that is, we drive that. If I have to be there at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'll be there at 2 o'clock in the morning. I've done that all my life. Local leadership, we will. This project will be run locally. Leggett will be here helping us. We communicate well over the internet. We do all that. We believe teamwork, that's all of us. We'll all work together with the best results. That person who makes the suggestion in the back of the room, we all go, oh, okay. Multiple times I found later on in that their comment that wasn't necessarily well thought through, the gem is there. And later on you're sitting there going, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea. And you go back and you can save money, you can save time, you can make things much better. Because everybody thinks about things differently. Some of them can't express it as well. Some of them can't work it out. But there's a lot of brilliance in the group. And that teamwork, bringing everybody together, you listen to everybody, you respect everybody, and we all get there together. It's our building, it's your building. It's not Carlson Design Team's building. You get these, you know, hand to you, and you're supposed to love. It's going to be your building. We want you to love it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice presentation.
Thanks.
We will recess for 10 minutes.
You'd have a rustic walk.
We are back in session. We're continuing our interviews here, presentations. Rohrbach Associate will be the next one. I'm Pat Hardy, Judge County Supervisor.
Mike Carberry, Johnson County Supervisor.
Terrence Nuschel, Supervisor.
Kimberly with the Auditor's Office.
Rod Sullivan, Supervisor.
Janelle Reddick, Supervisor.
Josh Bussard, Assistant Planner.
Elvin Water Facilities Manager. Michael Kennedy, Construction Manager.
Dave Dvorsky, Ambulance.
Andy Johnson, Assistant to the Board.
Steve Speller, Johnson County Ambulance.
These are all individuals that have a specific interest in it, or users of the facility. So you'll have about 20 minutes for your presentation, and we'll have about 20 to 30 minutes for questions and answers. So it's yours.
All right. Well, thanks very much. We are the Rohrbach Associates team. As you know, I'm Will Downing of Rohrbach Associates, James Phelps of Rohrbach Associates, and Kelly Hare with Design Engineers. And you might recognize Kelly from the latest Quarter Business Journal. We have the cover shot presenting at the sustainability conference that the journal put on. James, look at the next slide. Let's go through our agenda, describing our team leadership, our specific experience, lead processes and successes we've had, the design process, some conceptual planning for your future facility, talk briefly about the schedule and project labor agreements, open it up for questions, and if we will, at the very end, just a little conclusion from us. So, as I said, we're the Rohrbach Associates team, together with design engineers, HBK Engineering, and M2B Structural Engineers. We have a long-established team, been working together for almost all of my career on a variety of projects. I will be the principal in charge, project manager, and your main and single point of contact throughout the project, from beginning planning all the way through construction administration, occupancy, and post-occupancy. I will be the person you would turn to. James will be the project planner, project designer, also involved start to finish through the project. We'll also bring in Owen Wagner, intern architect in our firm, as a job captain and in charge of production of documents. The design engineers will be Dwight Schoon, Kelly Herrer, and Andy Dietrich. Be the design, mechanical, electrical, and telecommunications team. HBK Engineering, civil engineers, Brian Belk, someone I've worked with, again, for about 12 years, in his capacity with City of Iowa City and now in private practice. And M2B Engineers, probably one of the longest running structural engineering firms in Eastern Iowa. We've worked on just almost every project we've built with them. Touch briefly on our past experience. We've quite a lot of public safety, 24-hour facilities in Johnson County for the City of Iowa City Fire Department, police departments, and also City of Oskaloosa working on a replacement addition fire station there. We built two new fire stations, number 2 and 4, City, addition to fire station number 3, as well as renovations, remodeling, and main station downtown and the police department and public safety facilities, somewhat similar to what the ambulance department will be utilizing, 24-hour operations. Also worked quite extensively with healthcare facilities, Mercy Hospital, working on their emergency departments, again, interfacing at that time quite a bit with the ambulance service, making sure that that worked appropriately for transporting patients into their emergency department. And renovations of their patient units, new clinics we've done for Mercy, and then also quite a lot in the pathology histology laboratory that I think is applicable to the medical examiner's facility that you will be proposing here. Start off talking about energy efficiency and LEED, again, with our public facilities, pursued LEED as a means of evaluating energy efficiency strategies that we've implemented. So both fire stations 2 and 4 in Iowa City were achieved gold status. And quite a bit, of course, the University of Iowa as well. Now, Kelly, I think we wanted to talk a little bit more about LEED and energy efficiency in general.
Yeah. So the title up there is Sustainability Plus or Minus LEED. Sustainability has been something that I really have been passionate about in designing systems, buildings, sustainable buildings, along with this team for 12 years in the state of Iowa. LEED has really ushered in sustainability, but sustainability doesn't necessarily mean LEED. LEED has created a benchmark for comparing sustainable projects to one another, but not every project pursues LEED. The owner project requirements is a portion of what LEED requires, but our team likes to look at that document as something that we're doing on every project. Because of sustainability and its presence in our industry right now, the discussion at the beginning of a project, a lot of times, even 10 years ago, we would get a project from an owner with a budget and a program, and it would be left up to the design team to pick the systems. The owners wouldn't be really involved in, you know, construction R values and window types and, you know, shading and building orientation and daylighting and system efficiencies. Well, with the advent of sustainability, we have those discussions up front. That owner project requirement is something we come in and we have to be talking to you not only about, yeah, of course there's a budget and there's a program, but all owners now are pursuing sustainability, and it's great to, you know, we've got sustainability specialists in the room in the interview to ask questions. That's great because it's the drive of our industry right now. Every project that we do has some element of sustainability, but not every project is pursuing LEED. And so one of the questions that comes right up front is LEED a goal? Is LEED even an option, or is it a requirement? Is it a requirement of the local AHJ or the state or the Board of Regents? And so those are things that we have to get up front because, yeah, we design sustainable projects on, we're always looking for sustainable projects and sustainable ways of doing projects. But LEED, there's an extra layer that LEED requires. And a lot of it is really just the documentation required to prove your sustainability. You can be very sustainable without LEED. However, you don't have that ability to benchmark against other projects without your LEED certification. And so, you know, we really want to see what makes sense for your project, what's required and what makes sense. And those are all part of that original OPR. So we spent a lot of time meeting with the owner to make sure that we're getting the right project for you. So some of the things that are in LEED and sustainability commissioning, that's something that on any highly sustainable, efficient building, smart building, we really want to see commissioning on these projects. It helps the startup. It helps the owner get into the building with a minimal amount of issues at startup. Now, that's not to say that commissioning solves all problems, but it does assist in making sure that there's a smooth transition from construction to occupancy. And so construction schedule, you know, we have to think about construction schedule right up front in that OPR, because depending on how sustainable, depending on level of LEED, depending on what credits we may or may not go after, depending on whether or not we want commissioning. All of those things have to be built into our schedule, because if we're not planning for them at the very beginning, we're very likely to have overruns, and we know that overruns both in schedule and budget, and we don't want to have those. And so we want to have all of that stuff up front, conversations and decisions made, so that we can make sure that we're moving forward in the right direction. And then we pride ourselves on keeping that direction so that we don't go past either of those. And so that kind of just gets into the basis of this design, is really just, you know, what level of sustainability are we after here? What level of lead are we after? And we just, like I said, want to get those conversations up front. Collaboration, you know, our team, I've got a list up there. Design Engineers has done 5 lead projects. I've been commissioning authority on 2 projects. I've done 2 lead platinum projects. Our team has a extensive experience working on sustainable projects. And that takes a collaboration not only between the design team parties, but it takes a collaboration between the design team and the owner. There's a collaboration between the design team and the commissioning authority. There's collaboration between the design team and the contractors. And so this process from beginning to end is different than what contractors and teams are used to even 5 to 7 years ago. And so having a design team on board that has extensive experience in this can make the project go smoother, help keep us in budget, and help get you the right project.
Kelly, excuse me for interrupting. What does registered mean? Does
that So those are ones that have gone through the process, paid the initial fee, gone to the USGBC and said, hey, we want to pursue lead. And so there's a registration fee, but that means that we are in the process of filling out all the documentation and in the review process.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. Because I said, I hadn't heard of lead registered before.
Yep. And so just to go one step further on there, our team, design engineers, we've never had a project that we went after lead and did not get. We pride ourselves on making sure that once we set that goal, we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that we're designing systems and maintaining documentation, so that we don't get to the end of the project and say, oh, you wanted that credit, but we forgot to do this. That's just not going to, we're not going to allow things like that to happen. And that's why we need that upfront thinking about the sustainability and the lead from the beginning, so that we make sure when we do register, or if you do want to register for lead, we can obtain lead certification. So these are just a couple, again, just to, I think probably a lot of you are aware of these 2 projects, but I just wanted to, you know, there's a lot of credits that go into lead, and I'm sorry if this is hard to read, but really what I wanted to put up here and just show you in this slide, and then if you want to get to the next one too, James, is just that every one of these credits requires some amount of documentation. There's some paperwork, there's some schedule, there's some line in the specifications, there's something that we have to do to obtain every one of these credits. And so we want to be upfront and know what we're going after before we get too deep in the design. And so we will work with you to go through spreadsheets, sit down in meetings and say, this is this credit, this is what it means, this is what it would take to get it. Yes, it makes sense. No, it doesn't make sense. And we go through that whole list so that we know what we're after in the beginning again, so that when we get to registering, we don't get to a point where we register and can't get lead certification.
Excellent. And in addition, as customers of MidAmerican Energy, county is likely eligible for their commercial new construction program administered by the Lake Group as well. So another way of benchmarking the sustainability efforts and then achieving some sort of rebate on your energy system. So we wanted to touch a little bit about our process and design and our whole process throughout the project. So this is, I'm using fire station number 4 as an example here, but almost always we start off with the site, evaluating the site, look at the orientation of the building and what's the most appropriate here. This one here had some grading challenges to it, and also this one had some vehicle access requirements. It was a drive-through apparatus bay.
Did you want to say is that Scott Boulevard?
I'm sorry?
What's number 4? Is that Scott Boulevard?
Yes. North Dodge, yeah. North Dodge, Scott Boulevard. Yeah. So this is just examples of
how we fit the building and apparatus bay and the drive in there to kind of study and see what would be the best orientation. When we look at the design process and working with the clients and users, we look at the relationships of the rooms within the buildings. We call that a bubble diagram. And so the image on the upper left there is kind of all the spaces that are required, and we kind of literally do bubbles and see the relationship between all of them. The image on the right is kind of the end product right before it's built. That's, you can kind of see there's been changes there. It's an ongoing process. Every meeting there's improvements and changes. Also on the lower left there, we also look at each individual room and the users that use that room, and we lay out and look at every aspect of the room. So every room within the building will have something like this too, where we work with actual users. Just a quick massing study. We look at that to look at the massing of the building, look how light affects it, look at possibilities of clear story, natural light. We love to introduce natural light whenever we can and make sure it's appropriate for that space. So this is just the same project, kind of looking at that area and what's appropriate for it. After you get through all that, you get to a point where you do have to make the final decisions and show your clients. So on the left is kind of the final elevation depicting materials, all the notes about what's going on in the elevation. The image on the right is kind of what we achieved since it was a LEED project. I have it up there not because of LEED, but because it's a reminder that if you want to do LEED, it's good to know up front. LEED is not something you do afterwards or something like that. So it's part of the design process from day one. So then just kind of an example of the concept sketch and what we ended up with, both exterior and interior. I think in your program you have some type of living quarters like what we're showing on the right here. This was for the firefighters in station four. So your building, your site. So again, we would do the same thing where we look at the site, look at the footprint of where you're at now and see what can that site hold in terms of building footprint and the massing of it. When we look at it, we look at the context, look at the buildings that you're going to be relating to, look at the buildings that you might be walking to back and forth. It might influence the design. You might want to do something different, but it's certainly something that we have to look at from day one. We look at the major access for vehicle traffic, the entry points to the building, both service and public, and pedestrian access to the building, possibly from the ramp for staff. Again, just looking at it in terms of the sun and the opportunities for shading, and just see how the sun's going to react with the building and vice versa. So this is, we looked at your program and the square foot requirements, and this is really nothing more than a glorified bubble diagram to kind of see visually what we need on that site to support the program. So on the left is the first floor with the six ambulance bays. We kind of set this up in a three-module structural bay, each one holding two ambulance bays. So on the left there, you can see all six bays. To the south is the office work area. In the back is the physical plant department and medical examiner bay and wash bay. On the upper floor is the crew or living space, elevator and stairs to those areas, and then a second floor for the physical plant, storage area, and medical examiner's office clinic. Please, there's nothing set in stone here. This is just a diagram to kind of show a possibility and what's required for space on that site. I think there was some mention of how do we phase this? How do we work with the existing building? Is it possible to phase this so we can keep operations up in the existing facility? So like I said, this is a three structural bay. So in this one, you know, you build four ambulance bays while you're still in operation here. And then at some point you would move out of that and build the second part. Well, you might have some temporary areas in there as well for offices. Just massing wise, again, nothing set in stone here, but just looking at how it might relate. This is a view from Dubuque Street, like from the parking ramp looking straight over. The six ambulance bays and then the main entrance to the building right here to the offices and the living quarters back there. With some clear stories back to the physical plant upper office areas. Again, just looking at the massing itself and volume, I think there was a request for some type of on-site, at least limited on-site parking. So the back or east portion, southeast portion of this has some parking spaces and could have a staff entrance as well. The main entrance is out right off of Dubuque Street on the west side of the building. The massing on this, because of trying to introduce some light into the upper areas, is kind of made it easy to kind of go to a shed roof system. I don't know if that's the way we want to go or not, but at least in terms of massing, that's kind of how we looked at this. And then this is just a couple of views, eye-level views, right around the entry area from the Dubuque Street side of the building. And again, we aren't really showing materials and stuff at this point. This is something that we need to study and look and see what's appropriate and work with the massing and see how that works. Also, in the future, we have to look at how you might expand here. So in this one, whether it's going over the over or on the required parking area there, or to the south, I believe there's a house there that would have to be, you'd have to expand into that area. Or if it's something like service bays or equipment storage, that kind of thing, on the other side of the alley is also a possibility too.
Again, a little bit more nuts and bolts. You asked about schedule. Now, assuming we were to begin fairly quickly, entering into a pre-schematic design phase, roughly a month, moving schematic design another couple of months through design development, construction documents, might see the project being delivered to bidding in roughly 10 months, and then proceeding 3 or 4 weeks bidding. And then, again, assuming it were phased, as we're indicated, needing to maintain your existing ambulance facility, it clearly indicates a phased construction process. Each phase, 8 to 10 months, 10 to 12 months, perhaps, for the second phase, being a little bit more complicated with a two-story portion, potentially. So in other words, looking at if we were to start this summer, potentially entering into construction in 2016, occupancy of the first phase, 2017, late 2017, is a potential for the facility. Moving on, you'd asked specifically about project labor agreements. I noted in the RFP that that would be a requirement for this project. Interestingly enough, in Johnson County, trade wages are fairly well in line, we've noted, with Davis-Bacon rules and so forth. So most of the general contractors in our area will be amenable to that, we feel. From our side, the administrative requirements are we'd have to discuss with the county who's going to do the tracking on that, wage interviews and so forth. As a note, Fire Station 4 was built under a grant project that did require some employment and wage tracking. So we do have experience with the reporting requirements for that type of process as well. I think at that point, we're ready to open up to questions from the board and staff.
Probably 5 minutes over.
James, regarding expansion, and I know that that's just your bubble design is pretty, very preliminary. Is it possible you would have the two stories there, that vertical expansion to add a third story to what you were doing, say, in any of that, you know, phases?
Yeah, in the what I was shown as two-story there, or in the on the east part, there was a two-story portion of that as well.
Yes.
As long as you know up front, so
yeah,
the footings and everything else can be designed to support that.
Right.
So at least it's a possibility in the future. Absolutely.
Very good.
Let's talk about timing a little bit. You said to bidding 10 months?
That would be a minimum, yeah, schedule, but I think it's a realistic schedule, assuming that questions are answered and program is understood at the early phase. Yeah.
Okay. And if we chose not to phase, mm-hmm. construction would be, you had 8 to 10 months for each phase, but what if we chose not to phase?
If you chose not to phase and you're able to replace the ambulance facility somewhere else temporarily, then you'd probably be looking at a 12-month construction process.
Okay.
I'd like to ask a question about the financing. You know, we've got a budget.
Mm-hmm.
While there may be a possibility of expanding it just a little bit, mm-hmm. pretty much our budget is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
How will you deal with the fact that we probably have more wants than we can actually afford in this building?
Well, I think our first task would be to establish a preliminary statement of probable costs based on a square foot cost, taking that from our known historical costs for types of construction, and compare that to what your programmatic requirements are. So, and we could look at alternatives for types of construction. For instance, the apparatus bay, essentially a big open area. Maybe we go to a pre-engineered structure that would be more quickly constructed and more economical per square foot. As an alternative, something like fire stations were built in more conventional masonry load-bearing structure, a little bit more expensive. So we'd need to offer you some alternatives up front. And I think establishing that square foot cost and that requirement in the first 4 or 5 weeks is probably the key to understanding the rest of the scope.
I like the fact that I recognize all of you. And so that's a real positive. Tell me about some of the pros and cons now that Iowa City Fire Station number 4, Iowa Station Fire Station number 2, they're done. What's some good things out of that? And what's some things you learned that you wish you would have done differently? Or are there any leaks, things like that? You know, what, I mean, how do you learn from these things? So, because if we go with you folks, I'll tell you, one of the first calls I'll make is probably to some folks over there. So.
Yeah. I think building for the future is key. So understanding your needs right now, but then planning 20 to 30 years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing either expandability or building in as much as you can. I think the fire department will tell you the last station they built was 1972, and they didn't get another one until the replaced station 2 wasn't an expansion but just replacement, and they didn't get an expansion until 2012. So 30 years is a long time to fit inside what you've got. So you need to understand what you're going to need through the design process.
In terms of one of the things that I learned when designing that, I love talking to the firefighters afterwards. And the number one thing that I've heard them say is daylighting. And so that's, whenever we're looking at this, even on a bubble diagram stage, you know, I try and look and see what the best opportunities for that is. I think it was Fire Station 2 that was very dark.
2 on Melrose.
Yeah, yeah. We had the before pictures in there. And when you compare the two, that was a big feature. Clear stories down the hallway. Obviously, lighting into the apparatus bay, that was all stuff they really enjoyed and noticed a huge difference.
And that's tough. I mean, there's potential for a third floor on the parking ramp at some point, so trying to get some real light in there will be some, have some difficulty.
Sure.
But nonetheless, so are there any other pitfalls, things that you wish you would have done differently?
I don't know if I would say there's things that we wish we would have done differently. I think one of the big understandings that we get out of projects specifically like that is, as we try to push the envelope on sustainability and energy efficiency, There's an inherent complexity that goes along with that, and working with the users and the systems to try to make those systems as simplistic as possible. It's always a goal, but like I said, as you push that efficiency envelope, we're not dealing with your residential furnaces from your house that everybody understands how to work on them. And so I think education of the users before they move in at the systems that they have is something that we've learned is a very critical piece to making sure that transition is smooth.
And just one other question, how busy are you folks right now? That seems to, it's going to be a question that we're going to ask all the firms here, but yeah, as you all know, it's very busy around here. And so how does that impact you and your company?
Well, Iowa City and Johnson County are busy in construction, but I think the next wave is in planning. So we have capacity, and I think your firm has capacity right now for our staff time to begin planning and design for the next wave of construction, the next set of trains.
Let's explore that a little more, because our team sitting behind us is been anxious for this for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, so they're finally happy that we're here. They will not slow you down. So just to be clear, they've had a lot of meetings, they have a lot of ideas, and they're not going to slow anyone down. But your timeline is almost over double what one of the other design firms that have bid on this said. So when you say a minimum of 10 months, is that because you think we're going to slow you down, or you actually, that's how it fits into your work schedule?
I guess I would say that would be a design process and us working with you. If you can do more quickly, then we can certainly speed it up. We like to go through a detailed process where we plan and understand with your staff what their specific needs are. And I don't know that sitting down in one meeting over a piece of paper is going to get that done. It's probably going to take an initial meeting, make a list, confirm your program. We need to come back. And we can't come back tomorrow with a new set of plans. We need to come back giving us time to digest and analyze that information and then review it again. So the pre-schematic design phase, I think I have a month, 4 weeks. So maybe that's an initial meeting, a review meeting, and then beginning schematic design process. That's what we need, every couple of weeks to gather ourselves together. And I would say, assuming we're starting this summer, within, say, three or four weeks, getting a design process built through the winter, late winter, for late early spring construction is probably a reasonable time frame, so avoiding some of the winter conditions that you might experience if you were to, say, start construction in November this year. It might be better suited to start in, say, late February, giving us that time to really digest the design and understand the systems and make sure the planning for sustainability is well thought through. And something like the white group process also takes a couple of months to get through with the white group, so we don't want to get too far ahead of them either.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes back to some of those initial comments that I made, where we know that you want to give input, and we know that we want to take that input. 10 years ago, when a budget is established and a program is established and you turn the project over to us and the owner is kind of in the back seat for that entire process, designs, they used to go quicker because we had the ability to just move things forward, and it was just the way things were done. Or owners just were not involved in all of those decisions. And we've realized over the years that in order to get the right input and implement that into the design process and into our project, it just takes a little bit more time. And we as a team don't want to short-circuit any of those conversations and then have you move into a building and then have realized that we didn't go to the right person or didn't have time to get the right input. Not that you're going to slow us down, but that we want to make sure that we're hitting every one of the people that has or needs to put input into the project, and that just takes time.
And also, being a publicly owned facility, you have to go through the public, you know, Chapter 26 of the state code, public bidding process. We need to have a complete, thorough set of construction documents to bid to any eligible general contractor. Whereas if it were a light commercial building privately owned, we could start schematic design this week and start putting foundations in maybe 6 weeks. Once you pick the pre-engineered building, for instance, they could speak.
I appreciate the fact that you're telling it more like it is. I mean, every single building we've pretty much tried to put up, we've been promised a certain date, and it has never happened. So, I mean, just because of all the things that you go through, because it's Johnson County, Iowa, or it's just Iowa City, Iowa, it is just the way it is.
I want to be realistic.
You've talked quite a bit about LEED certification and so forth. We have two LEED trained individuals here on staff. Right. And how would you see them fitting into the process, or would you? And then how would you go about the commissioning and documentation of this?
Well, I think we would want to incorporate your staff as part of the design team 100%. If we have LEED trained members of your staff, and they can be part of the documentation, part of the design process to the greatest extent possible. So meeting as often as we can, offering their advice and
have them give some input on that when we go through that one slide that Kelly had that had all of the LEED credits possible, and we kind of look through and see what's realistic and which are the ones we want to try to go after. And so if there's certain ones they have experience with or ones that they want to achieve, then again, we'd want to know that up front.
And I think it was even noted in your RFQ that certain credits require, all the credits require documentation. I think you noted that you would be able to provide some of that documentation. That, of course, takes time off of our hands, helps with our speed our process, and helps reduce the time we spend. Obviously, it translates into reducing our hourly rate.
Right, and that's what I wanted to get at. Discounting the Joint Emergency Communications Building, the last time we did a LEED building, Josh did a lot of work on it, and we were able to actually get a rebate on the fees.
Mm-hmm.
So your fee structure that you proposed here includes you doing all the work on LEED. Is it negotiable that we would assist in that or not?
Well, I think we understood that a certain portion from, I said it was written in the RFQ, that a certain portion of the documentation would be provided by the county staff. So I think, short answer, of course, the fee is always negotiable. So I think we need to sit down and do as part of our negotiation, a thorough analysis of the fee, the time spent by staff, the time spent by our staff and our consultants. So yes, definitely need to be clearly outlined.
When you talk a little bit about the sustainability, do you find one heating system, cooling system, more efficient over another?
Yeah, I mean, that there's such a wide range anymore of systems that can be applied to specifically a building of this type, from radiant floor to radiant tube heating to supplementing forced air to VRF systems with supplemental hot water heating. There's condensing units now that have digital scroll compressors that are more efficient. Again, as you push that efficiency window, there's costs that go along with that and complexity. But as we get into those conversations, I would tell you on this building, there's probably 15 different combinations of HVAC systems that we could be looking at, depending on if it's heating only or if it's heating and cooled, or where we want to put the HVAC equipment, whether or not we want full energy recovery. The ambulance base probably want sensible heat recovery only. So there's a huge matrix of things that we need to go through. I would say that we're away from, in a building that wants to be sustainable, a residential furnace. But really, that's the only one I take off the table, because rooftop units, even anymore, have the digital scroll compressors, and they're reaching 20, 25. SEER ratings now, and so they're 20 or 30% better than what code says until we get to the, once we move into the ASHRAE 2014, a lot of that stuff is going to be required, ASHRAE 90.1. When that gets implemented later on this year, that's going to push that envelope farther, and so a lot of manufacturers are already designing equipment to meet those ratings, and really what it comes down to is how all those pieces fit together. Anybody can go and put the most high-efficient piece of equipment in their building, but it's how it works with the rest of the building and how the occupants are trained to use that equipment that really creates the sustainability and the energy efficiency of that facility.
We as the county have made a commitment to move forward on solar energy on our buildings. James, can you back the slide up to one that looked kind of the concept design of the building? And one thing I liked about that was the, especially the office building, the building is oriented east and west, which is good for solar, and there's an angle at the rooftop where daylighting can come in the north side, but it looks like it's a perfect angle for solar. Have you worked as with solar-ready buildings or put solar on any of the buildings that you've worked on?
We have a couple buildings on the University of Iowa campus that have solar on them. We have a very large array that is already designed and is being put on the roof of the Kirkwood Johnson County facility up on the Oakdale campus. That entire front sloped roof is going to be a solar array. And so that is a, we have one of the mechanical engineers in our office that did his master's thesis, built a solar house at Iowa State as part of his master's thesis. A lot of that we still work with the several manufacturers slash providers of the solar panels, because they're the ones that there's a lot of different types, whether or not you've got the inverters in the panels or you have separate inverter panels. And so there's a lot of different complexities that go into that. But yeah, absolutely, we've done that. And we've done the full design on them, and we've worked with contractors to help us supplement that design.
You have a room full of people here. Who do you folks see as the actual client?
Well, for the ambulance service, it's the person in the back of the ambulance. We want to make sure that they're served by the facility, and in turn, the vehicles are served by the facility. The crew are served, the administration can do their job 100%. And that goes on, I think, for all of the various components of this building. A physical plant has to be able to get in and out to service the physical structures that you own throughout the county. So, and ultimately, the building is built for, and our fees are paid for by the taxpayers.
And your offices are, is that the chamber building?
Yep, we're upstairs from the chamber. Right downtown. My house is about 10 blocks that way. James is about 10 blocks that way. Yeah, we're close.
You folks, how do you feel about project manager? Do you folks do all of that? Do you do project manager the county be part of that?
Well, it depends on how you would like to structure, but we are used to administering construction for private and public clients, where we operate meetings, you know, weekly, bi-weekly, semi-weekly meetings with general contractors, of course, managing the process through design and documentation as well. But if there is a project manager employed by the county, then we certainly would like to work with them to coordinate with the contractor and their subcontractors.
Which we do that quite a bit with the university as well. They have their own project managers.
Yeah. And I guess I would see our role as not changing one way or another. You know, where my coordination and collaboration is a lot more with the subcontractors below what would be a general contractor. And so the construction manager administering separate bids and or managing that contract, I'm still going to want to be at the meetings. I'm still going to want to be in close communication with mechanical, electrical, plumbing. And so I wouldn't see our role changing. That's just the service that we feel we need to provide to make sure that the project moves smoothly from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to follow it all the way through occupancy to make sure it's built to the design to meet your requirements.
Questions been answered? All right, thank you for the time. I appreciate you.
I just wanted to wrap up and say we are an established team. We've been working together a long time. We offer direct local experience for your project type. Proven success with energy efficiency, LEED, a successful design process to get you what you need. And lastly, we definitely really want to be your architects. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Very nice.
We will recess until 11:00. I'm sorry, 10:00.
I'm surprised.
executive session. Gentlemen, OPN, I guess. We have a group of individuals behind us who are actually not participating, but they're listening in. They're actually here. They are actually going to be users of the facility and then participants and so forth in the process of what we need for the building. Pat Hardy, Johnson County Board of Supervisors.
Mike Carberry, Board of Supervisors.
Terrence Nugel, Supervisor.
Kimberly Auditor's Office.
Rod Sullivan, Supervisor.
Janelle Redding, Supervisor.
Josh Broussard, Planning and Zoning.
Elden's Water Facilities Manager.
Michael Kennedy, Construction Manager.
Dave Dvorsky, Justice County Ambulance.
Andy Johnson, Assistant to the Board.
Thank you, Sam.
Can you introduce yourselves and we'll go ahead and get started?
All right, well, thank you. And we will do that. We've got a really brief agenda today. We're going to cover a lot of topics. We're going to go through some detail on how we would approach design and talk about schedule and budget, but a little bit about our team. I'm actually playing the role of David Sork today. David and I are partners at OPN. David, it's his 20th wedding anniversary, and they've had kind of the trip of a lifetime plan for a while. So David is on vacation for their 20th anniversary, so I'm going to do an introduction.
It's really important that we know where, because we like to travel.
He's in Bora Bora.
Bora Bora.
Yeah, and he said, Brad, I need you to fill in for me. I thought he was talking about going to Bora Bora. But anyways, we're very excited to be here, and we've spent a lot of time thinking about the project. Dave and Justin have spent a lot of time looking into this, and so we're excited to share our qualifications.
My name is Justin Bishop, also with OPN Architects. I'll be the project manager, your daily contact, and the project architect for this. I've been at OPN for about 11 years, and like Brad said, we're really excited to be here.
So. I'm Dwight Schoen with Design Engineers. I'm a principal and mechanical engineer. We'll be doing the mechanical and electrical and plumbing engineering for the project.
I'm Brian Belk with HBK Engineering here in Iowa City, providing the civil and site engineering for that, professional engineer.
So real quickly, we wanted to talk about our team and work we've done in Johnson County. It's interesting. As we compared notes, we think we've done over 1,500 projects within Johnson County. And for us at OPN, being a firm out of Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, and Madison, we looked at our scheduling sheet. We actually have 26 active projects in Johnson County, more than we actually have in Linn County. And I think that's pretty common for us. We have a lot of great clients down here, particularly with the University of Iowa, that we do a tremendous amount of work for. I'm going to show you just a quick snapshot of some of our projects, and these are meant to highlight what our design philosophy is. So I'll touch on a few. At Cedar Rapids, we just completed the main library. I think this is a great example of our focus on sustainability. This is a LEED Platinum building. It has a lot of really exciting features with stormwater management and a green roof. But it's also the attention to detail. It's designed in an envelope that has almost zero thermal breaks or air transfer to meet that LEED Platinum standard. As a firm, we've signed on to the AIA 2030 challenge, which means that right now we're endeavoring to design all of our buildings to be 70% more efficient than the average building within the region. Another example of our design philosophy is designing really great architecture within a really tight budget. This is a building we did for Linn County. It took all of their flood-affected departments, put them into one building in a new facility. It was completed for about $130 a square foot, including site work. And it had a lot of site work associated with it. So the building cost was probably $110. But it's a beautiful building. We had to make a lot of really strong choices about design and structure and things that you'll hear Justin talk about. The project also had a project labor agreement that I believe is something that you all are considering as well with your project. Next is a project for John Deere. We've done a lot of work for Deere & Company. This was their hangar facility. And I think it highlights, you know, our thought within even, you know, vehicle bays. And it's a pre-engineered building. I think we did a really elegant job of hiding the mechanical, electrical, plumbing systems within the building. It has a lot of natural daylight. You can see around the top perimeter. So during the day, they really don't turn their lights on within the hangar space. And then great visibility. You can see the windows up above. So from the other office space environments, you can look down into the vehicle bay. BIVI is a project, this was the first project we've done for them. It's under construction in Ames, but it was all about branding and identity for a corporation, and now we've since moved on and done, developed a brand and an identity and taken that to their other facilities as well. The building's also a catalyst for the research park in Ames. It's a new expansion of the research park, and they wanted this building to set the tone for future development.
And I think a project that probably is most comparable to this is in Des Moines, and it's their fire logistics and training facility. Again, a very tight budget, so part of the building is pre-engineered structure, part of it's conventional structure. Thinking of long-term cost, it too has natural daylight into the vehicle bay. But I think it's also, you know, this is where people work, where people live, where vehicles are stored, where they're washed, where they're maintained. And it's how do you knit all of those, you know, various functions together in a very attractive, pleasing building that's sustainable and on budget.
So we've had several conversations with some of you and viewed some of your existing facilities as well. And some of the things that we've heard that's resonated with us, first and foremost, meet the program and budget. We understand that. That's sort of the baseline. That's the given of what we need to do. Maximizing the efficiency of the ambulance movement, understanding the vehicular motion through the site is obviously going to be critical for the success of this project. There's flood issues. We're going to talk about the 2 versus 3 floor question and the future sort of expansion or shell space capability. And then also being sensitive to the riverfront crossings and the neighborhood in general. So when we looked at the existing facilities, some of the things that stood out to us was the conversation of separation between public and private. So there's a clear delineation there between where the public can interact with the space without getting behind sort of that line of where the staff needs to function. There's also unique storage needs, which involves security control. So there's drugs associated with the ambulances. There's medical records and evidence with the medical examiner, for example. So all of those things are going to have specific climate control needs. They're going to have specific security needs. And those are all things that we'll continue to work forward with all of you. We also had Dwight and David did a tour of the facility in Cedar Rapids that Dwight can speak to a little bit.
So, you know, one of the challenging things about building construction is every building is a prototype. You know, each one is custom. It's never been built before. So one of the ways you can kind of, since you don't get to build a prototype and learn everything from it and then build the real one, is to look at other facilities that have recently been built. And so that's why Dave and I went and walked through that facility with the director and just kind of picked their brain. Okay, so, you know, what would you do the same if you had to do it again, and what would you do different? And a couple of the key things, you know, a couple of things that they really liked. They really liked the snow melt on the entry drive to where the end of the facility, and absolutely would do that again. They really like having the whole building on the generator. They felt that was a good choice. On the lessons learned side of things, they would do differently. In the wash bay, they painted the CMU walls, and that's turned into kind of a maintenance hassle for them, where they have to repaint that at about $1,000. You know, every couple of years. And so anyway, it was a good chance to just start thinking about this project and what are some of the things that other people have learned when they built similar.
So from a site standpoint, there's a lot of influences on the surroundings. There's a couple things that we're highlighting with this diagram with the arrows. The red paths would be pedestrian circulation. The green paths are potential ambulance or vehicle circulation through the site. So there's a natural sort of intersection here where they cross, and that's something that might influence the design as we look at the massing and how you sort of address that crossing of paths there. And also looking at the pedestrian access across the street as well, understanding where people are coming from, where they're parking, how that really wants to start to influence the building.
Yeah, just in a couple other critical design issues that we see certainly is with regards to flood protection and management. Obviously being this close in proximity to Ralston Creek and the impacts that's had on the past. Our office is only about 3 or 4 blocks away, so we have a pretty good hands-on view and can easily walk to the site and get a glimpse of what's going on. I've been part of that for many years, involved with the City of Iowa City and managing their stormwater protection program and stormwater management program and being involved in the floods in 2008 and beyond that. So I think we'll certainly be able to provide good analysis and evaluation of that ingress, egress, knowing that time certainly is of concern with ambulance activity and getting vehicles in and out, and looking at the best way to maneuver that. And then also sustainability. We'd love to bring sustainability projects on the site side of things as well. Depending on the situation conditions, knowing this is a tighter site with the building, we certainly would look at evaluating that and knowing that Johnson County has provided that on a lot of their projects, for instance, here at the admin building, in terms of infiltration practices, we'd certainly look at that and see what we can bring to the table.
So the top colored bars here are just a summary of the program that was provided in the RFP. It's about 26,000 square feet. The question I had as I looked through that is, it wasn't clear if it was grossed up or not for the total spaces. There weren't elevators, stairs, corridors, restrooms, mechanical spaces specifically listed. So looking at that and the building type, about a 30% gross factor is something that we would find common or typical for this type of building. So that could easily sort of put you over that 30,000 square foot number, depending on how that plays out. So as we take that and as a mathematical exercise, look at how the site lays itself out with setbacks. We have setbacks around all the sides. And then also there's some operational type of setbacks as well that we would consider if you need additional apron or paving out in front of some of the loading bays. So with a 15,000 square foot footprint times two stories, you're about 31,000. So that's where this gross factor really becomes an important question, to make sure we can fit everything on the two levels. And so with some of the diagrams, you'll see we are not showing a two-story volume, so we're not losing part of that second floor plate because we feel like we're going to have a pretty full site if we can get this done with two floors. And then as we look at individual...
Can you go back to that?
Yeah.
Because it was zoned public, are those the correct setbacks then?
Yeah, those are the setbacks based on Riverfront Crossings development.
Right, but this was zoned public.
Yeah,
so Josh.
So we might have a little bit more room on the north and south.
Well,
yeah.
North, it's 5 feet.
Yeah.
5 feet.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Right.
We were asked by the city for 10. It's only 5.
So all the way around, right?
Except for the front has to be the 10.
So on two or three sides, it's 5, and on the front, it's 10?
Yeah,
okay.
That's pretty much it. So we get a little bit.
Yeah, that helps the math.
Doesn't help much, but it keeps you so.
Very, very good point. So we start to look at individual spaces as well as we work through this programming. So this is kind of an example of our process, and it's not solved in any way. We'd have to work with you to design this hand in hand. But talking about different ways the ambulance moves, we know there's 6 ambulances. This is showing 8 vehicles. Considering the idea that we could group the medical examiner with this, I think there's some future flexibility and growth opportunity there if that's desired, but also just efficiency and layout. If we can start to group like things, we'll use that circulation and efficiency. So this first one would be a pass-through scenario where you pass through the building then back into your stalls. The challenge with that is do you actually have to leave the building to back in? Or also, as the back doors of these ambulances are open, how do you get access and load and unload these things? So this is another pass-through scenario where you pull in head first. This leaves the back open. This is actually the same configuration they have in the Cedar Rapids Ambulance Center that Dwight and David toured. And then finally, a back-to-back, or this could also be a stacked configuration, is obviously your most efficient from a floor plan square footage standpoint. So all things that we would explore. There's this little vestibule here is also the idea of a wash bay. So you could have a wash bay as you pull through, or a vehicle vestibule, basically, as you enter the site. Which wouldn't work with a back-to-back configuration. But so just looking at the efficiencies and how this might start to inform the site. Looking at the level one floor plan, there's certain things that obviously have to be on level one with the garage and the physical plant vehicle storage needs. Looking at how much office and work area we can get for that front public entry, so they don't have to go all the way up to a second floor office to have that first interaction with the staff. And then on second floor, the core extends up, and you sort of pinwheel the spaces off of that. And as we look through some of the diagrams that I'll share with you, there's some natural things that will influence how we arrange these spaces. And then if we added a third floor, that would be, you know, the additional shelf space. So as we think about the influences here, the views to the west and to the north are probably most desirable. To the east, to the back alley, is probably not what I would consider the prime view for this site. And then along the south, we're also considering the adjacencies to the next building and a fire separation, a firewall there. So that really starts to inform your potential for daylighting. So as a really quick diagram, this is a very large city block. There, I mean, from a footprint standpoint, 120 plus feet of building. So thinking about the daylight and what spaces we would want to arrange around the perimeter will also be important. So as we start to look at this plan in 3D, this is simply massing diagrams. It's not architecture. It's not a bright red building, but just the idea of the mass of the building, the height. It starts to give you a sense of what this can be. So you can see the people here, the garage bays, and this is the two-story option. And this shows the back end, similar to the arrangement you guys currently have in the existing building. And then taking this and adding the third floor, if there's conversations of adding a third floor in the future versus adding it up front, I think that gives you the ability to answer some more questions about what you want to do on the roof. If we're talking about solar panels or skylights, this shows an integrated skylight with a light monitor. So that really brings daylight into the core of the building that otherwise wouldn't be reached from the perimeter wall. And then we have a lot of tools here, so I'm going to go through these pretty quickly, but different ways we would analyze this. Basically, we want to give you all as much information as possible to make informed decisions. And so there's lots of ways that we look at this through many different lenses and many different tools. And one of the tools we have is a 3D modeling software that actually looks at energy, looks at daylight, looks at total heat gain, heat loss in the winter. And so we've already done it for the two-story and the three-story concept, and then we have a three-story with skylight. So I don't have time to get into the details here, but that's the type of information that we'd be providing on a continuous basis. It's a fluid process that we track. Every decision we make can be sort of modeled as we go. And then we look at different components, too. So these are different exterior wall scenarios. So one conversation is if we go with a pre-engineered metal building. So they have certain skin types that work well with that. Precast panels have different benefits, you know, all the way up to a more of a high-performing metal panel rain screen. So they all have different R values that will feed directly into the energy model. And then there's also different cost points along the whole way. So again, just the order of magnitude of what we're looking at, we would provide that data as we go, and it's all about making informed decisions. So looking at it from a structural standpoint as well, a pre-engineered metal building here on the left, all the way up to basically a traditional steel frame structure with composite beams. Pros and cons for each one, and different price points for each one. So we know with pre-engineered metal building, that's going to be the most economical. It's also the most efficient. So there's very little room for future adaptation or addition. So thinking about solar panels, snow drifts, things like that, we would really have to understand that if we were to go down the pre-engineered metal building. So precast has benefits.
You used a term I don't know, snow drifts?
Snow loads.
Okay.
So anything you put on the roof would impact a snow load that would have to be carried by the structure.
Yeah.
Precast panels might be great for the garage interior finish from a durability standpoint, but again, just a lot of decisions to be made as we go through and a lot of information that we want to provide you. So we have less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe, you know, I can geek out all day about mechanical stuff, so I won't do that now because we don't have time and you probably wouldn't be interested anyway, but this is really just to show you the similar kind of process to what Justin was just talking about we would apply to mechanical electrical systems, looking at different options, really trying to find the best fit for your facility.
One of our questions is going to be that, so you might as well spend a little more time on it.
Yeah, okay. In our experience with this type of facility, radiant floor is absolutely the best kind of heat, but you have to balance that with the, you know, with the funds available. And so really it's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all approach. Maybe there's a hybrid approach. Overhead radiant tube heaters are also really great in vehicle bays. Really the advantage of both the radiant floor and the overhead radiant tube over a conventional forced air unit heater type of system is that the radiant options heat the objects. Your overhead radiant tube heaters are going to heat your vehicles and the solid objects. Unit heaters heat the air. And then the air heats the objects. So it's much better to heat the objects directly, either with radiant overhead radiant or radiant floor. And maybe a combination is a good idea. There are certain areas where, you know, if you have a maintenance bay or wash bay, that radiant floor would be an even bigger advantage there. In the storage bay, maybe it's not as important, and so maybe you could go with, save some money and go with radiant tube heaters.
So we have some basic cost per square foot and then operating costs over here, so it's pretty easy to figure out your paybacks and have all that information as we talk through these things. Photovoltaics, I'll hit on this just really quick, Dwayne. This is right down the street, obviously, the car charging station with the university. So looking at the payback, looking at federal and state incentives, and there's more we could talk about that as well, but something we're very familiar with and can help you guys on this project as well.
Yeah, and I just jumped in real quick on that. There are also power purchase agreements, which you may have heard about, which would allow you to do that without having that upfront investment. And so we've done some projects like that, too, that we could.
So we did take a quick pass at the LEED checklist. We understand LEED Silver to be the goal, and that is the threshold of 50 points. We're actually looking at about 61 points in the gold range. So Silver is very achievable in our mind. We don't see any issue with that at all. And then budget, understanding it's a 3.4 total project budget, there's some fixed things that are just required regardless of the decisions we make with the building. So with demolition, site improvement fees, all of these things come out, whether it's a two-story or three-story, you know, whatever structure we have. So that kind of gives you a remainder that would be divided up into different segments of construction. And we find a great value in sort of understanding that breakdown from the beginning, so you can track things as you go, and it's not lost in a large lump sum. So the more detail that we can get into from a budget standpoint, that's where we see some value. An overall project schedule, I think the big summary here is we're projecting a spring construction start. And so as you look through all the information and our processes, we think that's where this lines up well, where we can make really good informed decisions. There's obviously lots of ways to make that a lot quicker as well. So we'd be happy to work with you guys to determine that as well.
I'm going to have a question on that so we can stay there if
sure.
you want. So we have a lot of pent-up demand for this building. Our staff has met and talked till they're blue in the face. They will meet at any time about anything, so they're not going to hold you down at all.
Sure.
I think the board's committed to getting this done, so we wouldn't hold you down. So you have a 15-month projection for construction documents all the way through?
It's now till February, so it's not a full year.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what that count. Oh, meetings? Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, no. So sometime in February, so you'd get the spring start. And traditionally, February is a good time period that is common to bid. So
you have like a 10-month?
Yeah.
Okay. And you said there are ways to speed that up.
Absolutely.
What kind of ways?
We could do early packages. We could make decisions very early and up front. So if we know we want a pre-engineered metal building, you can start down that path now. We can make those decisions without having sort of every sort of variable vetted out. So that's where we felt that the spring time frame made sense to really go through the process and make the right decisions for the long term.
So this would be built, done by fall of 2016?
Yeah, I think 12 months or less in that time range for construction.
Yeah, construction in March.
Yeah.
And we've worked under really tight schedules before. I think that's one of the advantages of being a good-sized firm is we can put a lot of resources on it and adapt to a schedule. Short of knowing what some of your schedule parameters were, we just set out to put together what we thought was perhaps an ideal schedule in terms of bidding time. So it was really based on February. It's traditionally a really great time to bid a project. And knowing the budget is an issue, we thought we'll start with that and work backwards.
And then your concept doesn't really try to save that building for any time. It's pretty much take it down.
And actually, we talked about that as well in terms
when,
of...
When would it have to come down in that kind of...
Yeah, the phasing is an interesting. I think we have a diagram on phasing or a conversation.
We didn't get that one in. But.
We were discussing phasing and how do we relocate you temporarily. Part of that phasing strategy we'd be interested in visiting about is, you know, could we set up a temporary vehicle storage bays in the parking ramp across the street even during a period of time? Perhaps, you know, what are the options associated with that? And it did appeal to us with the February start date. We thought then that phasing strategy happens more in the warmer months rather than trying to do something temporary, you know, during the winter months. So it just felt that's where that schedule felt natural to us at that point as well.
So we talked about our design process a lot. We already had a design chart. We all got in a room and we sort of kick-started our design team thinking on this, and that's something we would include all of the key stakeholders in as well. A visioning session is something that's been really successful for a lot of projects like this for us, where we understand sort of the aspirations and the goals of this project more than just the nuts and bolts. So programming and detailed room information is definitely key to our process, but also taking the time to sort of understand everybody's collective goals on this is important as well. And again, just to reiterate one more time, timely and informed decisions. That's what I think will make this project the most successful. The more information we can give you to make these literally thousands of decisions that have to be made for this project is really our goal, to make your life as easy as possible to understand what we're going for here. So next steps, we're ready. Like Brad said, we have over 100 people across our three offices. We're ready to staff this and go as fast as possible. We actually already have sort of our first kickoff meeting ready to go. We have a little packet of information that we go through, questions, programming spaces. So I think with that, I would just say we're really excited about this opportunity, and I think we'll open it up to what other questions you have. So these are some of the things. I think we've tried to hit on most of these throughout the presentation, but if there's any other questions that we can answer, please let us know.
I think one of the first ones is the LEED process.
Yeah.
Registration, certification, other LEED documentation. We have two staff members who are LEED trained on staff here. So how do you see that fitting together?
Yeah, so, I guess I'd start first with sort of our philosophical approach to LEED. OPN and design engineers have done, I think, collectively, probably over 50 LEED projects. So we do have a lot of experience with the LEED process. From a philosophical standpoint, we look at sustainability in really a broader sense than LEED. LEED is a great decision-making tool. It's a great way to structure that process of thinking about sustainability and deciding things. But it's important that we approach sustainability in a smart way, and that we do sustainable things for the building that add value for the long term. And we're not just chasing points for the sake of chasing points. And that's really a fundamental philosophy, I think, of both our firms. When we go through the process, look at each point and consider, this is good for the environment. What's the value added for the building? And really make, good, solid choices for the long term. From a mechanical, electrical system standpoint, we think of sustainability in kind of a broader sense, than it's not just energy efficiency. So, for example, if you have a very energy efficient system, but it is not really suitable for the long term, in our mind, that's not sustainable. If you can't sustain the operation of that system because it's too complicated or it's too new or something like that, ultimately, that's not really sustainable. So, sustainability means not just energy efficiency, but the longevity.
Yeah, Dwight handled that really well. I think the only thing I'd add to that, and I think he's part of our team, is Tate Walker out of our Wisconsin office. We've always had a really strong philosophy and culture on sustainability in our firm. With Tate's guidance, we've, as I mentioned, signed on to the AIA 2030 plan, which means we as a firm are committed to designing energy efficient buildings. And Tate came to us. He's an architect. He worked for the state of Wisconsin in their energy efficiency office, working with architects around the state. He's a speaker at national conventions at Green Build. And he's organizing for us in a few weeks here. We'll be having our Green Day within our office where we bring speakers in. And it's kind of like a one-day retreat for our staff. Just we want it to be part of our culture. And as Dwight said, it's being smart about the choices we make.
While you're on that topic, heating and cooling, is there any system that you feel is better than another for a facility like this?
Yeah, so that's actually a big topic, because there's a lot of different ways that you can skin that cat. Like we talked about in the vehicle bay, there's different options, there's different pros and cons. We like to approach that with, from a informed decision-making process. So there's pros and cons to different approaches. For example, a geothermal is going to be your lowest energy option for heating and cooling, and that's going to be the lowest energy impact that you can do. It's also a more expensive option up front. And so, what we would propose to do is work with you and with the utility to look at rebates, to look at what is the expected payback of the different options. So, for example, look at geothermal. What's the operating savings going to look like? What's the upfront cost look like? And then work with you to find the best fit for your facility. There really, again, is there's not a one size fits all approach. What's right for one project isn't necessarily right for the next project. Like I said, this happens to be a topic that I can geek out on for a long period of time, so it's something I'm excited about, and but it's not, there's no simple absolutely this is definitely the right answer. It's really a back and forth process with you folks.
I have a question. Obviously there's a lot of people in the room, And you'll be working with a large group of people, but who do you ultimately see as the client?
That's a really interesting question, Rod. It's we do a tremendous amount of public work, like you saw the library or the work we did for Lincoln County, or the work we do at the university. And I think the university is a great example where I don't know that we have one singular client. There's so many stakeholders involved, and it's having that collaborative process where we have input from everybody. I would imagine as we would work with you all, we'd establish a building committee that I don't know if that have representatives from the county, maybe from a building maintenance and control standpoint, from the user group. I don't know, perhaps a few supervisors might sit on that group. But yeah, we definitely see that we have many stakeholders. With the public work we do, it's even the community themselves. And so having community open houses and making people aware of how the money is being spent and the decisions that are being made. So it's a really good question. I don't know if we can narrow it down and say this is the client. It's really a pretty broad range of people that we want to be pleased with our services and pleased with the outcome.
And on the back of the placemats, what I would add to that is we would identify that process. And so we have different dots down below for different meetings, different stakeholders. So that's just our first pass. We would work on what that right structure is, but identify who's involved and at what point, knowing that everybody has their stake in what's going on.
Who's your project manager? Do you work with project managers beyond that? You on your own?
Or out in internal to OPM?
On the job.
Yeah, so this is the one I will be the main project manager on. And for one of this scope, I would probably have job captains and other levels of staff underneath of me. So on larger projects, we have multiple project managers. So we have different structures for each project. But on this one, David will be the principal. He'll be involved in all the design meetings and throughout the project. And then I'll be the project manager, coordinating with folks like Dwight and really seeing the process all the way through construction. So it'll be the same face all the way through construction administration.
Yeah, we believe strongly. So Justin, in his role as the project manager, project architect, he's involved in the marketing to get the project, and he's also still with the project when it's muddy outside and you're putting foundations in the ground. So he'll be that single person that leads us through the entire project.
County has made a real commitment to solar, third-party power purchase agreements, that sort of stuff. You said you have experiences with that, and the universities, their carport solar facility and all sorts of stuff. Can you talk a little bit about making a building that's either has solar on it when you build it or that is solar ready?
Yeah, solar ready is a good term because you want it to be sort of a plug-and-play thing that you can do, and you don't have to retrofit the entire building afterwards. So I alluded to that with the pre-engineered metal building, but understanding the structural impacts to that. Also with solar panels, if we're going to angle them up versus a flat or sloped roof, that drastically changes the snow loading as well. So from an electrical standpoint, Dwight can speak to that as well. But architecturally, we do understand the significance of it from the very beginning. It's not an after-the-fact type of decision.
But in terms of being ready, structurally, that's probably the biggest thing because that's the hardest thing to do differently later. From an electrical standpoint, I don't want to oversimplify it, but it's not as complex electrically to bring in a solar after the fact and marry it with an electrical system that's already there as it is if you have a roof structure that can't support the additional snow load that comes with putting those drift makers. Is one way to think about solar panels on the roof. But we've done quite a few photovoltaic projects, not just at the university, but Berkeley Community College. Their new facility, the Johnson County Regional Center, has solar panels on that. That's not exactly a power purchase agreement, but it's one of those public-private partnerships that's structured to take advantage of the tax advantages that a public entity can't. Partner with a private entity that can take advantage of those. So there's different ways that can be handled.
Do you see this roof on this facility as a flat roof or as an angled roof, or could it be either?
Can we get over the conversation that nobody builds flat roofs anymore because we learned our lesson? It always has a tilt to it nowadays, so.
Sure. Yeah. So the graphic, I don't know how far back I'll go, but I like the idea of integrating it into the building, the structure, and as we look at the program and how the spaces shake out below it, if there's the need for skylights or monitors, that all needs to be integrated in the design. So this is not, like I said, this is not architecture. It is not, it's not a building design. It's a massing diagram to kind of show the scale of what we're talking about.
I do think just past the railroad tracks are two good examples. Dwight mentioned the car charging station at the university and in Kirkwood. Those are two projects we collaborated together on. Those are traditional PV panels, kind of a solar array. But the building just in the background on that top right picture is the CAN bus facility. Not one of ours architecturally, Dwight and his crew did that, but that has integrated solar into a sloping metal roof. So there are a variety of ways to consider that.
And, you know, just like with everything else that we've been talking about, there's pros and cons. You know, the integrated solar panels, you know, don't jump out at you. You don't notice them as solar panels, so that has that advantage. But the type of photovoltaic material that you can do that with is a little less efficient. So the one you see in the foreground there is you know, you get more per area of photovoltaic panel out of that one than you do with one in the background where it's integrated. And so it kind of depends on, you know, what are the priorities and what are the pros and cons.
It was interesting. That angle of that structure for the one in the foreground that we did was based specifically on the most efficient angle to gain the most, you know, power from the sun, where the building in the background, I think that was probably more based on, you know, what's the right volume for the space and what that metal roof can handle. So it's not the ideal angle, but it's less expensive integrated into the building. So it's just like all of those structural frames and the wall systems, and all of that has to go into the decision-making process. And it doesn't mean there's always one. There's always many answers. We have to collectively make the right decision.
Solar may be difficult. I mean, there's the desire at some point to add a third floor to the parking ramp. So that's built with that capability. I know there's some issues in regards to a separation between the ambulance and medical examiner as far as trucks and things of that nature, simply because of the kind of clientele that each uses. So there would be a lot of logistics there that maybe we didn't quite make clear in the process.
It'd be interesting to think of the ramp across the street, and the county owns both of those.
Yeah, it's a height problem. Again, just like what we have with our current garages.
Yeah.
But there's going to be options that we'll explore if we choose to have to just tear it down and start clean. The question would be, when does that have to happen?
Yeah. That's a big question. The solar array you see in the foreground was kind of the university's first effort into that, and it's kind of a test case. They're really monitoring to see how well it works. But one of the strategies that was discussed was, is that the kind of array you start to put on top of the other ramps around campus. You get these ramps that are up in the air, and you got that top level, and you start to put arrays. That's right. You know, the idea of solar on this building is that we're talking about today is important, but you could also, if you have property around there, I think it'd be good to analyze, is that the right best location for solar? Or would it make sense?
Yeah, maybe a third floor to the
ramp. And I mean, that brings in the problem that we're having with power purchase agreements, because we will not be the owner of the solar. And that's how we get take advantage, or they didn't take advantage of tax rebates there. It says federal tax incentives, so I'm not quite clear.
Well,
but
that's not that project. That's a representative it might be for this project.
With power purchase agreement, we're not the owner of it. We can't do net billing for our other properties. We can't do net billing at all on that building. And so it creates another layer of complexity that as we do our first power purchase agreement on another building, you know, we're having to work through. We would prefer to get the interpretation of code
change.
I'd like
to see that change.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so exactly. If you do a power purchase agreement, really you're not saving operating costs up front. Your power purchase agreement is probably structured so that the amount you pay that third party is going to be similar to what you would have paid the utility. And the advantage is that you're paying, you're getting renewable power, and it's not costing you more. And then usually they also include then a turnover where you then become the owner of that, and then you can start getting the operational savings. But it's not until after it's paid off that you really see those operational savings. So that's the, you know, that's the downside of power purchase, as opposed to another type of public-private partnership where you actually own it, but then you do have to fund it up front, and then that's when this paybacks. This that's what this scenario is based around, is the idea that, you know, you have a public-private partnership, but you're owning it, so you're funding the construction, and so you're still looking at a fairly long payback, though, in terms of that upfront cost. You start saving that operational money right up front, but you did have to pay quite a bit in your initial construction cost to be able to achieve that.
When you had your diagram up earlier, question kind of came to my mind. When you talk about the setbacks on the property lines, such as, say, on the front or even the rest of the building, is that the entire building or is it just the first floor? Can that cantilever over to the property line on the second or third floor?
We've done that on a couple projects.
Yeah, I would imagine, though, the setbacks would more traditionally be through the whole building. Sometimes you can have a canopy, like an eyebrow canopy or something, projected over that. But
unless your name is Moen.
It would look like it would make a nice walkway for
yeah.
pedestrians coming in or whatever.
Yeah, and I think, as Justin mentioned too, it's not just the setbacks, but it's also, you know, how much space do you want before or outside of the vehicle bay to work? You know, do you want to be able to pull a vehicle out of the vehicle bay before you're on top of the sidewalk or, you know, encroaching on some of those areas? So I think it's balancing all of those factors to look at the footprint.
Any more questions from the board? Any last comments you'd like to make before we end?
No, I would just say we appreciate the opportunity to be here today. We're excited about what this project can be and how we can help you guys make that reality.
Yeah, I the same. I think it's a really neat project. It's Dave and Justin have put a lot of time into this, so I wish David, he would have loved to have been here today. We apologize for that, but we do appreciate this opportunity. You've asked a lot of really great questions, so thank you for that, and we look forward to your decision.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I think we'd rather be in Bora Bora.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to recess for about 5 minutes. We are back in session. We completed those three interviews. So now we'll have some discussion on decision who we feel might be the proper one.
We can't go into executive session until we're dealing with contract negotiations. Is that true?
I think that's right.
So everything we say now is streaming, just so everybody understands that.
Well, and just to be technical, we're not streaming down here.
Oh, it will be streamed later today.
Which actually I thought for purposes of an interim.
It's a good idea.
Probably good.
Yeah.
Is that like having a 5-second delay on TV?
Yeah, it's a poker thing.
Just checking. And that's something with froggy voice. Hey, I just wanted to say I have kind of in my mind 1, 2, 3-ish, but before I even think that, I kind of want to know what you folks think. So that's where I was going to
go. Yeah, me too.
That's
okay with you. I got mine rated that way too.
I'd like to thank the Space Needs Committee for getting three really good groups to interview. I was very impressed by all of them. I do have a kind of a ranking order, but people that have worked on this to narrow it from 10 to 3, I think you did a great job, and thank you for doing that.
We're just getting feedback from all of you folks when they started on it.
Okay, my pecking order, I guess, would be OPN first, Carlson second, and Robach was third. I liked that OPN did the homework, included shots from the building and everything. And I like Carlson's idea as far as the group sit down and go to, but I thought their timeline might have been pretty tight. On the thing, as far as, you know, let's from here to here, point A to point B, was I like their concept of everybody sitting down for a day and we just nail this, and that might be an ideal thing that whoever you choose might be, that's something we need to look at, where we can sit down for a half a day or day or whatever and just say, okay, this is what we need to do. So that's kind of where I'm at on them.
Michael?
I'm kind of, OPN I was impressed with. The design, I would have liked to see a little bit more of a concept that they would may have had for the building. I know it was just a block design, but I'm really not into that too much. I liked Carlson number two, probably with the group design. I think that would really move the whole concept forward a lot faster.
Carlson, your number one?
Probably OPN.
OPN,
okay. Carlson, I thought was number one at the beginning because I liked the group design. I think a lot of the thought has been put into it from everyone already. So I think we could save a lot of time by getting together and working through that more as a group rather than presenting ideas and have the architect do some of the work and then come back at, you know, a month later or something. I think a lot of that thought process has already been done. Rollback, wasn't really too they had some good points, but I think they were probably my number three.
OPN was my number one choice, and partly because I think they did a great presentation, and I met with them early after the RFQ came out. They came over to the site, they looked at the site, they asked a lot of questions, and they actually, you know, obviously took some of that information from their design. Robach and Carlson, I thought, were close on theirs. I did think that no matter who we choose, we should try and use that group design concept that Carlson talked a lot about. I'm sure we can do that with any one of them. Robach had probably the best schematic drawings up there, although I didn't really care for them. At least they had them, so yeah, that was a plus for them. But my number one pick would still be OPN.
Well, Elton's going to hate me. I like Rorock. I felt that they had they might be able to deliver the best for client involvement. They're going to listen to us the most. They're small enough that it will be important to them, but large enough that they do have expertise. I felt that when it comes to sustainability, I think that they would be the best to work with. OPN, they're a great firm, lots of experience, they have expertise, sustainability. I kind of felt that OPN, that they're sort of, that this is, that they'll be small potatoes for them. We're not going to be the most important client for them, which is in all the projects I've been involved in. That's most important to me. Carlson, you know, I felt that their timeline was too tight. Possibly they haven't done all their homework. And I just felt that the drawings and the ideas that they offered, they just weren't on par with OPN and Rohrbach.
Thank you.
Becky?
I also would have put Rohrbach first. I felt like they have a very well-integrated team I like how much experience they have with 24/7. They have sustainability well integrated into what they do. And I think they were clear on how they could integrate our input. My concern with OPN was, even in the presentation, they made several assumptions that, you know, they didn't know, maybe it didn't matter, they didn't know about our PPA experience, but, about mixing medical examiner with the ambulance. So I was a little concerned about that. And Carlson, I did like their emphasis on working with the team. Hesitancy that we would be their first project where they have their team working together. But I was impressed generally with the different organizations. But I still would put more about first.
Who was your second choice?
It's kind of a hard one, but I would... I don't know, but maybe OPM second, third. But as others are saying, I think that having a full day perhaps even followed by a second meeting that gets into all the details and tons of what would be important.
Thank you. Board, Andy?
Andy, you have anything to say?
You sure?
No, I don't have the specific experience with the, or involvement, so I'll pass.
Who did the best on timing?
Andy.
Did you have to put your sign up?
I do have an answer on that.
You want the board?
Well, yeah. I mean, do we want to get to that, or can we just talk generic a little bit?
Can you do generic if you like for a minute?
I had a problem with Carlson in that the woman who's going to be the project director wasn't allowed to speak at all. I found that a little disconcerting that if she's going to be the one leading us, why wasn't she leading us?
Well, and she immediately, when it was asked, do you have the time? Well, we're hiring a graduate student now. I mean, I don't know about you all, but that was concerning to me. That's one of my red flags I had was, not that a graduate student isn't important and would do a lot of that, but I do get concerned when the very first thing that comes out of someone's mouth is we're going to be, for our project, you know, is that the person?
I mean, I frankly like the fact that they'd get us to bid this fall, and that has to do with the funding issue. While we were told them 3.4, we were actually very clear that we would consider more money in next year's budget. So I want this bid in time to do that. I want the bid results in before we have to finalize next year's budget. So that timing, it doesn't have to be 18 weeks, which may have seemed a little aggressive, but I wanted to know if anyone could shorten it up because we need to know the final bid sometime in January so that it can be incorporated in the budget. FY17. So I dropped Carlson for a variety of reasons, but that is mainly it.
You have something?
Hey. Yeah. Not yet.
One thing I wanted to add was on the Carlson deal, he came up with different and newer systems for the mechanical side for heating and cooling, where the other ones were just kind of stuck where they were.
I think that's a very good point. I had that as a plus.
I mean, that, the what are they, VR?
Variable refrigerator.
That is fair. I mean, that's the cat's meow anymore because you just take a little pipe to each room and you're ready to go.
It's controllable.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean we can't get that.
Oh, no, exactly.
No. But they were creative in putting it out there.
That was the first thing. I mean, he pretty much come out and said, Geo, and he put a brake on real quick, and then he said, we got other things we can use that are just as efficient, if not more. And that's what I like. Yeah.
Robot did mention.
What's that?
Robot. Yeah.
I got the impression with Rohrbach that they've got some buildings that are already designed, and that's what they do, and that we would meet with them and they'd come back in a couple months and they'd dust one off and go, here's yours, which is the same as everything else we built. And I didn't get the impression that they had I didn't get the impression that they responded to the specific points as well as the other two did. That was my take.
But they gave us at least something that was different conceptually than anybody else. I mean, as far as wasn't just a square box.
Not that they were here
to do that, but.
Yeah.
But it did bother me. We'll meet with you. We'll go away for 2 or 3 months. We'll come back. We'll meet with you. I think as the customer, we can say that's not acceptable to us. Because Carlson clearly, from my perspective, was the winner on involving us. We're going to sit down and know everything you want right away. Where Rohrbach, is that how you spell it? Rohrbach.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of like, we'll meet with you once, and then we'll go away for a couple months, then we'll meet with you again. And I think we can just say no, that if we choose them, that's not the way it's going to happen. You're not just giving us a cookie-cutter building. We have specific needs and desires, And you're going to know that before we ever get started.
And I thought you could tell that OPN had spoken to people in the room. I mean, it was pretty clear.
They had clearly done their homework.
But they didn't do their homework. They put the medical examiner's cars right next to the ambulance.
Sure.
That was, I mean, that was like,
yeah, but
how many times did
I had a problem
say
with that?
That's a bad idea.
But I mean,
who they talked to?
Well,
he did say that that was a part of a space saving.
Rohrbach didn't even come close to the square footage. I mean, they can't have the stuff they designed.
But did OPN listen and not care?
I don't know, but I guess I'd rather have to deal with those two by each other than 15,000 square feet less than we actually need to. I mean, because I didn't see in their building how you could do it on their diagrams. I don't know. Maybe.
And you know, maybe there's such a thing as a design they could have in the same area, but they could be boxed off some way. So.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm just saying, everyone keeps saying, well, they met with me. Well, great. Then you didn't listen.
Yeah. Well, you're going
to. I'd rather have them not listen to
me. I think you're going to miss. I mean, you can always pick out something that.
That's huge.
Well, I think you can always pick out. I don't think it's as big as this. Like I said, I don't see how Rohrbach's works. I honestly don't. I think they're a good 10 to 15,000 square feet short.
Yeah, well,
they're not showing a two-story building. Explain how they do it.
I mean, the thing is that their finished products are really nice looking. And, I haven't had a chance to talk to firefighters after just going through, but certainly going through the open houses.
Yes.
They are pretty spectacular. I don't know how they are with budgets and... I mean, you know, fireplaces and recliners and all the other things that were inside the fire stations either. But, you know, station number 4 was compliments of the Board of Supervisors for paying for a dispatch service for the city by the city. I'm sure they thanked us somewhere.
Well, if I have an order, I was probably Rohrbach first, then OPN, then Carlson. There's a lot I really liked about Rohrbach and the design and also the experience they have with these 24/7 buildings. I've been to the open houses. I've done a lot of things. I think that they'll, someone else had mentioned that they're small enough that we're going to be their number one client, so to speak. And if we want to speed up the process, they'll do that. They'll do what we want, I think, and come out with a very, very nice building, exactly what we want, that looks good. OPN is spectacular. I thought those buildings were, I don't know how they're going to get those buildings built in the budget that we have. That huge, big block building, that is massive. But maybe it can be.
But they didn't say that online. They said that was...
It was a mass thing. But I also wasn't so fond of the flat roof type concept. And I really like Carlson's, but they're all working as groups. They're all working as a group. I mean, if you saw HBK was in all of them, and M2B, they're all
a lot of
working as teams already and working with us. I don't think we could go wrong with any of the three. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a little bit shades of gray, but my shades of gray were Rohrbach first, then OPN, then Carlson.
And it's mostly Rohrbach local.
Yeah, Rohrbach's local.
All
local.
And Carlson.
All local.
So you raised a really good point there, Mike.
Yeah.
Part of it is what we demand to them as the clients.
Yeah.
So I didn't get so bogged down in the details because, you know, we haven't told them what we want and where we want showers and how we want traffic to flow. More so for me, it was, were you missing anything big? Had you paid attention to what we asked you to do? And do you look adaptable and flexible or stringent? Because I think we can be both very demanding customers and then also somewhat flexible, where we are somewhat flexible on the budget. They may not know that, but if they'd have listened to our budget meetings, they would have heard that. You know, we're trying to build a building that's going to last us for a long time. We guessed on a price. We know we may be wrong.
Yeah.
But you can't build us a $10 million building. I mean, you know, you can't. And so are you going to be flexible enough to work with us on what we need, or are you just going to listen to us once and run away and give us the cookie cutter? But I think we can make any of these three companies work. I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if I had to rank my three in order, it would have been OPN, Carlson, and Rohrbach. And, you know, I think you can find things where anybody, you know, like Rohrbach had parking in there that we didn't ask for. And as a matter of fact, we'd said the opposite. We didn't want staff parking. We wanted a couple of public parking spaces, and they gave staff parking in the back. And I don't know. They've all done local projects. They've all done 24/7 projects. I don't think there's a question that anybody here can do the job. I don't question that. I felt like OPN was the best presentation. It seemed to me that they had done the most homework, and that'd be my vote.
I thought they all did very good presentations. With Carlson, I was a little concerned about some of the things we've noted. Also, that this is the first time that this team is together. I hate to be test projects. So I'm a little concerned about that. With Rohrbach, I thought that they gave probably the most creativity for a project. I'm concerned about how to live within the means that are probably different than some of their clients that they've had. And the question will be, do we really need to get real fancy, quite frankly, across the street or not? Or don't we just need kind of a square building with a garage and office space and storage? And a little bit of me kind of brings it back to actually cookie cutter doesn't sound like that bad of idea for projects as far as outside of things. OPN, I thought, gave a really well-rounded presentation. Again, as I noted, I was a little concerned about they spent all this time and then didn't quite get some of the stuff right, but all of those things get cleaned up real quick. And so they had some pros and cons there as well. So if I probably had to rank, I probably liked OPN as the top, and probably Rohrbach and Carlson. Or maybe one and two could be changed. It's fairly even. But I didn't really think at the end OPN did do a little bit better on things. My only concern is when you get something so close, and Mike, I know you pointed this out, and you start thinking local, you know, what is the best choice? And so that's something to be considered as well. So that's where I'd like three, two, and then one.
I put Carlson last. I just wasn't comfortable. I like that Rohrbach has done facilities not unsimilar to this. You know, it's a lot different beast to do a fire station than a medical center. I mean, and, you know, we're way closer to a fire station than we are to anything else. And I think OPN is hungry to get in the Johnson County market with the county, and they, you know, their architecture fees reflect that. I mean, they're over a percentage lower than the other companies. They seemed more flexible on changing that design time than Rohrbach did. He said a minimum of 10 months. And I've been very clear, I want this to bid well before we're into the next budget. I would be even happy to break ground this fall and get the groundwork done. But that seems, by two of these companies, unrealistic. And that just is probably me who's impatient. So I actually I can go any way with Rohrbach and OPN. I thought Rohrbach was clearly more informed and engaged in their presentation on sustainability. But I know OPN's done sustainability, so I thought if I would give them advice that they didn't concentrate on that enough, where Rohrbach clearly had done their homework, that they knew we wanted to hear that. But I don't think that means that OPN won't do what we want them to do. So I am so very close on this that I guess I would go with OPN if, but I'm open to hearing arguments on Rohrbach and opening that debate. But I am concerned about OPN because we are small potatoes. This probably will be the smallest project they're doing. It doesn't involve the type of projects, the type of, you know, their design philosophy doesn't really come into play in our ambulance building with a strict budget, you know, ambulance medical examiner. And that kind of threw me off there because I'm like, I don't really care about your design philosophy. Put some red brick on it and make it match these buildings, you know, a little bit, and we're done. But I think they were willing to talk about that. So it's really, really close for me. I mean, I can go either way on those two. Carlson would be my last.
Well, I'm kind of along the same guidelines, standards of that. Kind of what threw it over to OPN for me was the fact that they had a lot of discussion about they talked about the stormwater, how they're going to manage that, the sustainability, and they're the only ones that really mentioned the riverfront standards, knowing that they have to work in that particular area and meet those standards.
They had the setbacks wrong, did they?
Well, they did, but they weren't given.
They went by what?
They went by the. They went
by the code.
Right. They went by the district. That actually shows they did their homework on that part. Yeah. But I mean, I didn't consider that big a deal.
I did like that they put the flood map up.
The overlay on the. Yeah.
But I liked some of the things the other working together. I think Carlson from the state, they worked as a team more than some of the others. But if I had to lay it out, I think I'd be OPN, Carlson, and Rohrbach.
Sounds like we got a decision.
Well, I think it looks like Carlson, if we had to whittle one out, first of all, and then... But, you know, OPN seems to have the most number one votes, and Rohrbach is right, is a close second, and Carlson is
and I am interested, yeah. I mean, just to put this out there, the facility side went OPN, the sustainability side went Rohrbach. Did you guys talk to each other?
No.
So you came to those conclusions on your own?
Yeah. In my opinion.
That means something. Now, you were close, Michael.
Sustainability is important, but not for the same reason that it is for Josh. But because I know on the design side of the building, it's all moving that direction anyway.
Right, absolutely.
So it doesn't have the same weight in my mind because I know it's weighted that way anyway. And that weight that they're putting into it is heavier up front than what I think it should be because we're all going that way anyway. So I'm looking at more the people and the groups and the engineering side. On the other side, I'm not looking at the...
It'd be good to know what you guys like specifically so that we can take that to another company.
Because that was my point. I think we can tell any of these people what we want and demand that of them as long as we start day one.
Because
we do know if we're going to use a green energy, which is questionable based on the site location... For solar, we're going to bring a solar consultant in before we get too far along. I mean, we know that.
I think one of the things that I had against OPN was the fact that I think we gave them every opportunity we could. I think they missed the whole idea of the project manager. And I think that they talked about committee and so forth. That works up to a point. I think we need all that input. And then once that decision is made, they need to work with the project manager. I think we just need to make that clear to them.
I think they see everybody in the room, then they're thinking everybody here is the committee. That's, I think,
but they're on the back side of their paper.
a structure.
Yeah. And just in fairness, one language thing I noticed was construction manager was not used. I mean, so that thing, they were talking project manager.
Well, they have a project manager.
Yeah. Right. So I'm just saying he might have.
It might have been a language from.
And I just throw one thing that I was impressed with OPN is, and maybe it's just obvious, but they were the only ones that commented about the pedestrian traffic and the trucks coming out. And so, like, the envelope that we've suggested, I hadn't really thought about that before, but you don't want trucks.
Well, we only got one way we can really come out.
Right. So. But they have to have,
yeah.
But that is, especially with the city's desire to make this Dubuque Street, you know, very pedestrian friendly.
Right.
And we certainly don't want to interfere with that. They need to be thinking that up front. And then, you know, Terrence, when you were talking about the medical examiner and the ambulance being together, when I spoke with any of the architects, I never, I guess, specifically said we don't want that to happen. I did talk to them a lot about the public and private spaces being separated.
So it's your fault.
Yes, it's my fault.
Well, I did that one. I'm not saying they can't be together, but,
right, but
they have smelly stuff.
Yeah.
And we are sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. And if we can keep them with a wall or a door or a different air system,
absolutely,
that's a good idea.
But there's just no doubt about it. You start thinking about a price of this thing. To put a garage on one side and put a building on the other, it's going to be your cheapest option. I mean, it's just with storage above the garage. I mean, done, you know, and that's kind of what OPN kind of laid it out. I think they know the price tag here. It's not a lot of money to play with. And the cheapest thing you could probably do is kind of do what Kent Park did out there. You know, you have a building one side, you have a garage on the other.
And, you know, we can give some direction on what we want to do. I mean, I think the idea of where they showed some parking, built one company.
Roebuck.
You know,
yeah, I was surprised.
And that could probably be a possibility for just a small area for the two vehicles for the medical examiner. It could be.
Well, the other thing for the medical, the other thing was the medical examiner has, and you have people coming in to pay bills, so you're going to need a couple of spots to park just for that, for the public.
Not necessarily. I mean,
there are spots up front.
There are metered parking and spots across the street.
Yeah, that's true too.
I think the RFQ maybe said something about limited parking.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine even like, you know, that in front of the HHS building, two spots could say, or ambulance facility only, or whatever.
Josh and Becky, can you jump in?
You know, I think OPN is a very good firm. I guess I chose Roebuck because, you know, it goes back to they're the smaller firm. I felt that on the sustainability side that they would be more open to ideas. They're willing to work with us more, that we would be more involved in the design. Whereas OPN was like, you know, they kept going on the, you know, I don't know whether we want a metal building or not, but it's like, you know, they're like, you're getting a metal building, you know, this is what it's going to be. I just, you know, I guess it would be important to me that, you know, that the county has a say in and works with the architect in designing this building so we get exactly what we want. Even if it means that the timeline is a little longer, in the end, we are getting the exact building that we want, and there will be no surprises.
I mean, does everyone have in their head right now, we're not going to have a building probably until
next year,
October of next year?
I'd say one year at least, from whenever.
So even longer.
Yeah.
If you go with a steel building package,
yeah,
that's going to dictate the manufacturer that makes that building. You order it in February, they're going to tell you when it's going to be delivered. The building we just finished, it was ordered in March, early March, and was delivered in the second week in July.
So could that all that be ordered in December of this year?
Well, the engineering has to be done, not just for the structure by the architects, but the internal engineering for the metal, the steel building.
Well, I guess I'm just bidding. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm just into the dumbing down of the idea here that we need a garage and we need an office.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't understand why this
has to be. The sketches that we gave to begin
Someone
with
else
were
need a building like that.
I think both of Carlson and Rohrbach and OPN. I'm like, really? 10 months? I mean, our people will meet with you next week. I mean, they'll clear their schedule. I get it takes time, but that just seemed...
See, I'm just into that, like...
But OPN was way more flexible than Rohrbach on discussing changing that schedule.
Yeah, because they brought up that if you go with the steel structure, it's going to have less time on it. And I think they, one of the things they mentioned when you were talking about facilities and that was you don't have to have an expensive system to get a cost-effective system, which, keep it simple, stupid, is kind of the idea I want as far as a system.
That's kind of
where
my mind is a little bit. I mean, this isn't an HHS building here. This is...
You can put the money in the west side because that's what you're going to be seeing.
Yeah.
And you have utility usage on the east side especially.
And storage, maybe a mezzanine above the garage.
Does a steel building, does that prevent us from expanding it?
Well, that's what he said.
Well, if it's engineered, they could go up.
Right.
Or unless it's steel on one side and then it's, you know, structured more on the other.
We can do a core of the building that could go up. The steel building could be on the sides and steel building to the center, and the core could go up. I did a sketch for him like that, and Elton did a layout on the floor that was in three sections, so the structure could come out of the center, and it wouldn't have to have slope roof, but it'd be a slope roof behind, so if you wanted the solar, it could be a two-level on the lower level, and then on the upper third floor, it could be sloped facing the south, and it would go east and west, so you'd have all slope roof. But it wouldn't have to be showing that way in the front. You could have a parapet wall, which is 3 foot high, so it could look like a flat roof like this building, but actually a sloping roof behind, and it would give you the best of both worlds.
So it's still like it could still be built in such a manner that you can go up on top of it.
Exactly.
And it's just your shell with the steel. Stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm able to do that.
And if you're talking about going up, I mean, assuming that you aren't going to need additional garage space, which Dave has always said that any additional expansion would be out in other places, assuming Eldon doesn't get a much bigger fleet, you know, then you know, we've got several thousand square feet sitting over here unused right now. I mean, the idea that we need to go a third floor there for some future reason, it's like, well, yeah, you could, but you also...
I'll tell you the one I'm actually worried about. It's not Eldon, because if your department, I mean, if we built Justice Center or something, we probably, you wouldn't have a central campus. We'd probably, it's cheaper to put more of your vehicles at secondary roads than downtown. So it's not you expanding. It's not ambulance expanding. The auditor's office will expand. We have 20,000 more residents. They're going to add 5 to 10 more precincts. So we do need to think about the size of those machines and what that means. But it's medical examiner, and they're not in the room. Right now, it's two vehicles. And what I don't have a good feel from him is how long will it stay two vehicles? And that is the one thing that I still have a big question mark here, is if we have 20,000 more deaths in our county, are you still at two vehicles? Yeah. Because right now, one is only, there's only one transport vehicle. The other one's a tissue vehicle. If we had two transport vehicles and like a, just a car, you know, would that be enough? And could, you know, the car could stay in the lot. He is the one department that I don't understand future expansion. And that doesn't mean a third story. It's garage.
All future would mean is that they may need two in there. The one they use as a car now can, like you said, be over here. So that's actually their expansion.
Or you take an ambulance.
Their expansion is a second ME
exactly.
Transport vehicle.
Just a warning, the agenda's about that. I mean, I know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Before I get...
One of the things when we met...
Well, but the RFQ was expansion. We're talking about expansion.
Right. I know.
So I don't think we're off topic.
I like how Rohrbach showed the expansion. Their first expansion was to take away those parking spots. You know, they showed actually a couple different sizes of to show sketches.
They also had purchasing the house, too.
Yeah, possibly. But, well, that's, that could be a possibility as well. My question is percentage of 8% for Rohrbach and Carlson versus 6.875. How much is that?
Under 40,000.
Yeah.
I mean,
the difference.
If
it's 4 million, it'd be 40,000.
Yeah. Right. So, but it just shows you that OPN wants the business.
Yes.
I mean, they didn't do their normal market 8%, which is what everyone else does.
Yeah.
The question will be, as we pick a place, what's the next step? Because are we all kind of on the same page? I mean, we all just kind of said 3.4 million, and probably realistically it should be great if it's done by the end of 2016, right? I mean, can we all at least start doing this stuff in phases? But eventually, you have five people here that want to at least say something, and you folks are the ones that are going to have to actually implement it. So what's the plan right after this?
Well, I would think that if you vote to accept somebody, then we get them on board right away to get everything implemented. I mean, I'm just looking at the secondary roads, which was a steel building in itself, but it was a design steel. We're sitting at over a year on it now. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and they promised
to be realistic.
That's why I like the idea that, okay, realistically.
Yeah, realistically, you're going to be over a year from
the problem
you say
is
yes,
where to put these folks. And, you know, and that's a whole other issue that has not been discussed with the board at all.
We'll have 10 months to get that arranged.
Unless we can do a phasing thing. I mean, if we can work the design out where it's a phasing, then they can stay where they're at.
That gets back to the garage and once the Kent Park version.
That's one of the very first questions that has to be answered, because
firewall,
depending on how they answer that question, we're going to have to make a decision. It's probably a financial decision. And then we go. You know.
Yeah.
So,
however, I'm not really for certain that at this stage in the design process that any one of those firms can tell you 100% that we're not going to be able to stay, or we're going to have to.
And I mean, I think we knew that in budgeting. If you go listen to the minutes, we knew that this was a guess.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and that we understood that we may have to budget more next year, but we really don't want to do it. I mean, you know, there's going to have to be a really good reason for it. So we may have some flexibility, which is why neither of the two firms, OPN and Rohrbach's timeline worked for me, because I need a bid out when we're in the middle of next year's budget discussions. Because if we're going to need another $500,000, I want to know that before we really start budgeting.
That's right.
And so to answer your question, Terrence, whoever we pick, which it seems like the majority were with OPN, but I still want to get sustainability's objections, we first say to them, this timeline doesn't work. And so we are not going to delay you.
We need the bids back about Christmas.
Right,
so
absolutely.
So we can make that decision.
Right. That's my...
With
and then
bids.
Construction, as soon as the ground thaws and allows them, and ambulance will be out for basically a year. And it seems if phasing is more expensive, which I think people, at least one firm indicated that, then what are our options? What's it going to cost us to move them?
Unless it's just two projects. Roger,
how much is phasing versus
invitation?
Yeah.
Went to my point is I don't know if they're going to have that until they actually get into the meat and potatoes.
Yeah. Until you hire one of them, then they can sit down and say, okay,
so
this is going to cost.
So do we have a standard contract, Andy, that will?
I mean, I think architects do. I guess I was going to suggest as far as process, and I don't know if that's what we're on, but if. So if there is consensus, then I'll email the three firms, and then you can want to designate who kind of continues the discussion on getting a contract. I mean, that shouldn't be too hard. Architects have a standard one, but there was talk about negotiating that based on, you know, what we're covering ourselves. And we can get the contract. On and I think in that first sit down we could talk about some of this. Obviously they'll be able to listen to this and hear what is said about timelines. And
so before I answer that, Josh and Becky, you both picked someone else, so can you
I mean,
I guess,
can you live with OPN?
You said that you wanted to hear my objections. I don't think I really have any objections or more preferences. I think from what I heard, I would prefer to work with Rohrbach. As I said, they're a smaller firm. They're local. I think they have some great experience. OPN, you know, they're a great firm too. They're just big. They're headquartered in Cedar Rapids. They're not really in the Iowa City market. But, you know, I think that they'll work with us just as well. So I just, you know, it's more a preference thing as opposed to any really objections.
I'll give them a little bit of help, maybe, because I would say OPN didn't answer the question about working with staff. He answered sustainability stuff and what all they do. But what I heard, he actually didn't answer that question.
And I feel like one of the
like
things...
Like you say, we can make them, and we can, that's part of it. But,
yeah.
But that could be, I noticed that.
And that's a good point, Andy. That's one of the things.
And that's probably my fault, because I didn't follow up. I'd gotten tired.
with OVA, they said that they already had a design charrette, they had a design charrette without the client. I was like, that seemed a little, you know, they're just sort of like...
I think they're trying to show that they've put time into, you know, we already have this.
We have some ideas. Yeah.
But
maybe that they wanted to come in, that we have some ideas already, you know, that you're hiring me for, but it just wasn't that. You know,
I think they just had that for what they showed.
I think it was a questionnaire kind of thing.
Lead us, more than, you know, around this is the building that you're getting. So.
Becky, you have anything you want to say?
I think it's just a second life. I mean, I absolutely defer to...
I want you guys to be comfortable.
In terms of,
I mean, I want
to know that these folks have texted me. Oh, yeah, clearly.
Nobody gets everything they want,
right,
but
right.
We need you to be able to work with them.
Oh, yes,
and working with staff is not negotiable, so we can do a follow-up call before we vote on this and say, you know, you didn't answer that question. And
I know. I'm familiar with OPN. They'll work with us. So
and OPN did do well with my... I mean, they actually have PLA experience working with Lynn County. I think that maybe helped move things along a little bit faster. So that was a positive. I mean, everything's on just that, right on that edge.
I would just, I mean, I just did find that Rohrbach had, I thought, a thoughtfulness and an attentiveness, even in his answer to the question, my client is the person in the back of the hand. I thought that what was the architect and the engineer gave very thoughtful answers. And so even though they might not have been explicit about some things, that they would be willing to work with us. So that's that again. I think if we told OPN how we want to work and not just what we need, they would be responsible.
Okay. Now to answer your question, Andy, I think you have to be the lead on getting the contract together.
Yeah. Okay. And I think
with everyone in the room.
We obviously want it done yesterday, you know. So
and I'd have to say
my real thing.
Either one, all three of those, either one of them could have done the job and done it tonight.
Now, who's on space needs?
Is that what
I am?
Yeah.
So I think as far as negotiating any thing about facilities, you got to involve Rod and Josh and one of them, Michael.
Okay.
You know, about staff doing some of the work. But their budget is already lower than anyone else's, so I think they've accounted a discount to start with.
And this is big enough that as we meet on Wednesdays, this probably should just be a standing item at some point in the near future, as far as just a subject to be able to discuss where we are with things.
Yeah, that we have them come in and just give us an update where they're at, anything that they may or may not need to move forward, including Michael. So do we want to officially make the determination?
We can't
vote in
here. We can give any direction, and then we'll probably just put it on official.
Well, we have to do it.
Do you want that, or do you want to just approve the contract?
That'll just
I mean,
be
you're
awesome.
Giving direction when the contract comes, but if
that's
you
what
want
we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you want a formal vote, it could be on next week.
Well, that'd be at some point.
Just
do the contract, because if for whatever reason they are difficult to negotiate with, we don't have to use
we're not on the hook.
So
okay.
And involve, you know, sustainability, because that working with them was a big question mark. And,
Okay.
So do we send letters to those other alternates?
I'll email them.
You can email them or back a letter.
Okay. Well, I think.
I think a letter is more professional.
Well, I mean, I'd like to let them know because yeah. This will be posted, but I think.
Let them know right away.
I think you could do thank you letters.
And I appreciate you folks being in the room. Several of you changed my mind. So.
Okay. Anything other? On behalf of all the end users of that building, I just want to thank you for moving this forward. I'm still in shock that we've gotten this far. So thank you very much for moving
forward.
Just
skip
that. Just one more thing.
Don't count your chickens yet, okay?
Medical examiner wasn't really in the room today, per se. And, you know, we just want to make sure that... moving forward, was Mike part of the space
needs?
He
was on space needs.
Yeah, he just
encouraged him. He's here. He just chose not to sit in.
Okay.
He's in the building. So if there's any extra space, I get it.
See?
Can we meet at 1:30?
Up there.
That would be a turn.